You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And good day, good afternoon, dear listeners. Wherever you find yourself, welcome to this Monday session, this new week edition, this introduction to the next 5 days or 4 days and a half, specifically of this last week of August. And primarily, wherever you find yourself, you're listening to The Home Run, minus Helmut for this week. Yeah, I can't use some of the tease words like call Helmut here at the office, but primarily, you know, he's had to make his annual pilgrimage to the Kavango River. just in that scenario, just so you know where he actually went off to. But nonetheless, as we always find ourselves here, primarily where you'll be in my company, I will be joined by David a little bit later on. But it also helps us to set the particular scene. And don't worry, I'm a little bit more liberal as well. You can come through during the particular course of the program in terms of your caller's contributions. As you know, I do have a hawk-eyed observation ability to look at the phone lines. You can come through at 083-288-401. And if you don't know as yet and you have not seen our socials, I'm slightly disappointed in you. But you know what? You are our most trusted and appreciated stakeholder, the listener. We are looking today into a conversation that I had the privilege, technically, to attend a book launch on this particular subject matter. It's a subject matter we also had specifically with, with David on the radar of that same day. But we are looking at the triangle that is positioned there for us. We are looking at the particular essence that we could not see. I'll be honest with you. You know, I have not seen this dimension. I am glad that it took a bunch of, law academics, you know, academics specializing in law, but they also said that they were assisted by economists and academics from an economic sphere, by specialists and consultants, from trade and commerce spheres, to give insights into their premise, into their hypothesis. Now, our hypothesis primarily leverages off that initial hypothesis that these authors, the four particular authors, just so that you know who they are, not promoting the book, but actually just citing the particular dimension that the book aims to take. The book obviously edited by Tapiwa Warikandwa, Kennedy Karisep, Serge Kamga, and Dennis Zaire. Two of them are Namibian, two of them obviously not Namibian, so that you know. But obviously the particular point they like to take in terms of comparing the synergy of the three items or the three particular sort of like pillars, which is constitutionalism, meaning what your constitution protects and aims to protect and aim to provide for, sustainable development, sustainable economic development, the goals that your country has set for itself, and the AFCFTA. From that, they obviously cite prospects and challenges, but I just want us to firstly start off with the three pillars itself. Now, I've got an admission to make, which is also a slight confession. For the past 6 years that the topic of the AFCFTA has been hot property, up and until this book launch, and up and until I had this conversation back in last week and in the week before with David, when he and I both together came from the same book launch, I asked this question: have we ever seen between us in Namibia our ministries, just like they're now trying to, you know, that they're now trying to sort of like garner public participation, broad public participation in many particular public impacting or national impacting developments, which can be from new laws to law, to amendments of laws, to the evolution of some and others. And I have not, for the life of me, for the past 6 years, nor even before 2018, seen any public participation or public engagement about the AFC-FTA. And I'm only realizing this now in 2026. David and I, Helmut and I, David and Helmut and I, we've all had a discussion about the AFC-FTA, but for the love of me, I don't remember anywhere where we've cited the AFC-FTA in terms of it being stressed or it being put before a public scrutiny exercise that'll help you Namibians ask the question of why are we doing this? What led to this point? What actually brought this point to realization? David, how you doing? Thank you for joining us. I hope you weren't scolded earlier at your workshop.
Come again?
I hope you weren't scolded earlier at your workshop.
I don't know. It was a great workshop. It was.
No, I'll keep it an inside joke so the listeners don't know what the joke was. But
yeah. So how are you doing?
No, we're doing okay. Mm. We're obviously starting from a philosophic perspective.
Yeah.
You've heard this. I asked this question before.
Yeah, I see.
So, but I want you also to, you know, start from that departure point because. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I have not remembered any public participation about the AFC-FTA, the scrutiny of this protocol in front of a broader Namibian public, like what we are now doing with new law developments, you know?
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting topic, especially when you speak about things of economic diplomacy at a continental level. But one thing that we need to put in mind is why is it our business to discuss issues of international trade? Why is the business of every Namibian to discuss issues of international trade and economic diplomacy?
Mm.
And that is where your aspect of consultation and also broader public engagement coming in, especially looking at the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. And those big words that are being used at international platform, continental engagement, and you know, when leaders meet other leaders, are this international concept really understood?
Mm.
And it's a very good thing that you started from that point. And also, I think from a philosophical point of view, you have done justice. That's why what we want.
It's just a question so far.
Yeah. What you want is taking it down.
Yeah.
To an ordinary person. And when we are speaking about an ordinary person, is that if you have a continental framework on trade, was it simplified to those who are involved?
Mm.
And it's also touching down to stakeholders' engagement because if you speak about Africa Continental Free Trade Area, it's not a government business. It's a government business in terms of ratifying and making it part of the law.
And promoting it and convincing us, yeah.
But the real beneficiary of Continental Free Trade Area, as it is intended, are the business people.
Mm.
These are the informal sector. These are the women and youth, as they are mentioned. And I think people are now trying, they have a very bigger task now to make sure that whatever has been said, whatever has been defined, from UN, continental, and also regional, whatever have been defined in that concept, has now to to be simplified so that everybody can know. Because people think when Africa Continental Free Trade Area is not fully implemented, people think it's a failure of government.
Mm.
Government will benefit only that if businesses are prepared, if youth know what is their section, if women know what is their section, what is their role in the economy. And coming from various engagement and also seeing, I think the government is really trying to see where the gaps are, but we have a bigger gaps. We have a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Today I attended a very beautiful training on diplomacy and the protocols. But one of the things that we raised, and it's a fair discussion that we had with an ED for NIPAM, and he was very honest because we asked to say, we want to have access to your previous research.
Mm.
He was very honest to say that is what we are trying to capacitate. There was no real research done, especially that institution. And they like honest leaders who don't doctor the communique. And it can also come to Africa with the free trade area. Let's go to the institution that that are responsible for making sure that people understand. Let's go to NIPDB, for example. Let's go to Trade Forum, for example.
Mm.
Let's go to MIRET, for example, and ask to say, as far as you guys are implementing Namibia foreign policy, do you only engage at an international affairs? Because there is no international relation without the domestic affairs.
Yeah.
Because that is a connecting part. And that is a question that should be asked and should be asked to everybody to say, when we are coming up with this framework, to what extent do we have to make that sure that people understand? And when you also fragment them or divide them to say there is a gap, you have the law, you have the economic part. What is the other point?
A sustainable development.
And sustainable development.
Yeah.
You can do well at two. But
realizing the third one is a tricky one. Yeah.
It's going to be very problematic. You can do well at upholding it. You can do well at ratifying it, making it part of your laws, understood by your policymakers.
Mm.
But if those who are supposed to benefit will not understand it, then it's good for nothing.
It's a good point that because that is the fear, David. Now that I look back on after we saw the light-hearted presentations and discussions that were held, I liked Karise basically gave like his overview was basically like the operations of the conference where this book comes from.
Yeah.
The two guest contributions from Warikandwa and from Professor Millet, the German Polish guy that also spoke in terms of assessing or reviewing some of the chapters.
Yeah.
They went into the book.
Yeah.
But just now what you said I will draw back on what Millet cited once, which was the thing of how attractive authoritarian governments look to the youth, especially disgruntled youth, which has been a personal problem that I have had with many youth, even like in Namibia, who shouted for Traore, they shouted for the guy in, where's that country? Gabon. And then it was Equatorial Guinea. And then it was Mali. And then it was, who's the other one? Niger. But the negative thing that we continuously see is how the youth at that stage, they love the no-nonsense approach that these military guys bring. For example, even Madagascar.
Yeah.
And I even interviewed two international guys earlier today for On the Radar, and they both said, you can see the opportunism that these military guys want to take.
Yeah.
They see an opportunity. They capture the state, the government, and all the resources.
Mm.
Then the president who's elected has to run away.
Yeah.
And then they impose themselves. And then they make a lot of, I don't want to say cheap promises because I don't know about Madagascar scenario, whether it's cheap or not.
No, you are right. It's not too expensive.
All it costs is oxygen. All it costs is oxygen. but the concern is most that the handing over, supposedly supposed to be not more than 24 months from last year. We're obviously in second phase, so this is a year later.
Yeah.
But here's the big dilemma, David. Madagascar is a country that faces a lot of, just like Mozambique, a lot of natural disasters.
Yeah.
So it's either extreme heat, which impacts basically agricultural capabilities, and then it's exposure specifically to those tropical storms from the Indian Ocean
that come
Africa's direction.
Yeah.
It's not a country that is rich with money.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the pockets.
Yeah.
The dimension from that has been, SADC is now, our president comes back last week. Ramaphosa takes over chairmanship from Mnangagwa for SADC. Mm. And now they are speaking about ramping up the regional integration.
Yeah.
But you and I, we can see the integration in a SADC sense, you know.
Yeah.
We see the foreign businesses. We see the integrated transport.
Yeah.
Our question has always been, even here on Eagle FM, what happens past DRC?
Yeah, no, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that you brought that up. You know, the issue of trade in SADC region, as far as leaders are speaking about trade in SADC region, so improved, but it's so slow. Speaking about one third, the question that you need to ask yourself is, what are you trading with? Who are you trading with, and what are you trading? Because at the center of regional integration, we don't just integrate. You are selling me something that was made from Malaysia. You're selling me a t-shirt that was made from Malaysia, was made from Poland or whatever. It's also a question of who it is the center of that. We can do, and I'm giving an example of order with me, because I also wear order with me. I like giving an example.
I hope you're not doing Prime Minister Ngurare and Minister Shafuda's presentation earlier this year, where they stood there. This is order with me, guys. And actually, their order with me, is the actual order with me we need, you know? You go to a tailor, the tailor just buys the material and makes your suit.
Yeah, I like giving that example because you can do a lot of exchange of product and money, but you are not moving because that money is not staying with you. It's going to the main source. That is why the conversation should be, when we are integrating, are we sharing of resources?
Yeah.
Are we sharing of resources? If Namibia has uranium, which country within the continent of Africa has capacity to process or to add value to uranium? If Namibia has gold, which country has capacity for refinery? And what can be done to make sure that Namibia has a refinery so that when we sell, we are getting that $4,500 per ounce.
Yeah.
we are getting that amount of money per ounce. Because that
not
is
Namibian only, dollars, guys.
Yeah, it's
US dollars per ounce.
And that is the only way that it's going to be effective.
Yeah.
You know, we praised the Ministry of Trade when launched the first shipment to Nigeria of salt, whether it's processed finished
and
salt.
And of the red meat to Ghana.
Yeah,
yeah.
And also some of the hides and, I don't know the difference, hides and skins to Kenya.
Thing.
And when you look at that, you see that we are moving. But when you ask really yourself a question to say, are those continental trade productive? Can we rely really on them? Apart from now, South Africa, that we also sell raw materials, are those trade really productive? Are they at the higher volume? And when are you going to see? Because me, I don't, you cannot convince me until I see the numbers changing. We have raised this question to say, talking is good. Coming up with projects is good. But the success of the project is going to be seen in two things. Number one, the change of trade statistics. Trade statistics, there was a day we were discussing, then you indicated that EU also came along. But the trade statistics of trade statistic report of every month of 2026, then you go back 15 years ago, they are almost the same. There is always commonality. To say ship out, ship in. Not finish here before you ship out.
Not package here before you ship
not
out.
Not package before you ship. Celebration when ship in more, then you expand malls. And that can already tell you to say, until we come to the point of saying, we are shipping out more in the continent, but we are not only shipping out more in the continent of what we've been shipping out.
Mm.
If we are producing maize meal, for example, we produce it, we pack it, we have, even the bags are made here, or those nylons and all these things, then you have the whole sector of, how do they like value chain, benefiting
from like that. They love that new phrase, value chain, and then if it's oil and gas, it's upstream, downstream.
No, you benefit from value chain, which indeed is a very good thing to say, you can benefit from that, but is it really being done? And the other thing also that we need to look at is a disruption. I like the president when she said, I'm going to be a disruptive president.
Mm.
Because sometimes the system need practical business unusual.
Mm. Approaches.
The system need somebody to disrupt it. And I think it's also a matter of being cautious and also being careful, because when you are coming to the system, and this is being taught in a lesson of leadership to say, it's quite very difficult to change things so fast.
Mm.
They can work, but they can also take you down. People, as we are, we are resistant to change.
Mm.
We have to go through a gradual process of changing. But a practical disruption, just to say, we are cutting this, or we want more accountability, or we want more accountability in terms of what is coming in. We want accountability in terms of finance, for example, or you want a real project standing.
Yeah.
Then you can be a disruptive in a good way, because when people speak about revolution does not mean people becoming problematic. Revolution is the thinking.
Yeah.
It's the thinking.
It's supposed to lead to an improvement in something.
Because everybody can be a revolutionary.
Yeah.
The president can be a revolutionary. You are revolutionary because you don't want to subscribe to the status quo.
Yeah.
You want to bring in a new system that you say is business unusual. That's a revolutionary thinking, to say how things have been, they did not work.
Mm.
That's why when I come in, we revolutionize things.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why most of this word has been misunderstood. When somebody says a revolutionary, they think it's
complete chaos and stuff.
No, it's Fidel Castro.
And, yeah, it's
and the
yeah.
It's not like that. You can be a revolutionary in terms of thinking and also in terms of changing things.
Mm.
Because if you are revolutionary in terms of your idea and practical implementation, you must come to the point of saying, Neman, this thing that we have been doing, they must stop. Then we must calculate that risk to say, other people will pull out. Not everybody's going to pull out.
Mm.
Other people will go and come back.
Mm.
Other people will force you on the table. But go and ask yourself to say, we rely so much on diamond, but diamond, it's falling, it's going down to the... Is it right to say rabbit pit? It's going down to the...
Whichever table. One you use, as long as it's below ground level, you know that it's just falling away.
No, it's going down.
Yeah.
Diamond is going down. I don't know when it's going to come back. But
David, here's the safe thinking there. When every time since I've now paid attention to the budget announcement by every finance minister, I sit there thinking to myself, once again, a philosophic question. Why are you mentioning something to me and I don't see its money impacting me? You know it fits in somewhere in the whole budget application, but you know that the taxpayers, the real diamond of Namibia's progress here, is every Namibian paying tax out there. Every Namibian spending money on VAT. Because if you go buy a cold drink now at a shop at these retailers, you're spending, you're giving 15% of that $1, every $1 that you're spending, just like that, to the government.
Yeah.
So the government is making its money regardless. Mm. So the government will always have cash flow. The dimension of mentioning, of every finance minister mentioning the diamond sales, I really want to know, of what use was that? If we can't, David, here's a core concern, because I tell this to Helmut every time.
Yeah.
If we can't, you and I, have and pick up a diamond like this on the ground, then why is this thing useful to us? About knowing about its health, about its well-being, about how, what's the percentage, whether or not there was a downturn. Dude, Literally, who cares about diamonds? Because no Namibian cares about diamonds.
Yeah, anymore.
I sound revolutionary, don't worry. Yeah. But I've been revolutionary against diamonds because don't see benefits.
No, it's a fair argument because in terms of trade, you know, it's like I like giving this thing to say a product in the market is like the most beautiful lady in the village. Everybody want her.
But the, now, the king, but now, usually the product is like there's a duplication of the same lady in the same village.
No. You're the most beautiful lady in the village or in the kingdom.
Yeah. You know that so if it's a rare product, yeah, it's very expensive.
Yeah, it's a rare product.
Yeah.
But now, as time goes, there's always a new beautiful face every year.
A new and improved version of the
and
product.
It's also something that we do not want to admit as human beings. There's always somebody fresh, better, smarter than you, well equipped. And if we are not coming to terms with those things, then we are going to be a society in denial.
Yeah.
Even in the market, to say there is always something which is trending.
Or we lie that we are practicing meritocracy, but then we're doing the exact opposite.
That's what I tell you. That's what I tell you. There is always something which is trending, very sharp, but it will not take forever.
Yeah.
The demand for lithium will not go forever.
Yeah.
The demand for uranium now that we are trading with it and we are making more money out of it is not going to be here forever. And people must know this. It's going to go down at one point.
Mm.
Maybe tomorrow, maybe after 5 years, maybe after 10 years.
Mm.
Because trending, they are up and down. Diamond has been number one. Gold was up, came down. Then now we have rare earth minerals.
Mm.
The question is that are you utilizing...
And the rare earth is not even like a guarantee. What did that guy present to us at NUST? He said literally, if you crush it too hard, it's useless. Mm. If you don't know which rocks contain it, you also don't know.
Yeah. And the thing that I want to make is that there's always a difficult question. You like philosophical.
No, we have to start from philosophical dimension.
The difficult question that everybody should ask is that, are you utilizing what you have when you have it at that moment in time?
Or do you know it's a value?
Yeah, or do you know it's a value?
Yeah.
Because if Namibia economy until now, we rely on extraction.
Mm.
Mining have lifespan.
Mm.
Rossing is going until I think 2035 or something.
Mm.
Other mines, some are new, but they always have a lifespan.
Mm.
Demands are always there, but things can change. Other discovery can happen in other countries.
Mm.
DRC is leading now in terms of mineral deposit. Who knows what will happen in Greenland? I don't know who's going to take over Greenland. I don't know how to be taken, but it's also a discovery of the wealth underground. It's a land.
Yeah.
Now the question is that extraction has served us when we had a smaller population. Extraction has served us when we started, but other countries has moved.
Mm.
Now, when you want to go to Africa Continental Free Trade Area, ask yourself a question.
Do we want to sell them diamonds?
How many things of value do we sell to DRC? We sell fish. What else? How many things of value do we sell to...
I think the salt is also there.
Yeah, the salt.
Yeah.
But how many things of value do we sell to Angola? Do we sell to Congo Brazzaville? Do we sell to Burkina Faso?
Do we sell to Tanzania?
Tanzania, to Egypt.
Yeah.
I know Morocco is red flag. We are not talking.
We went and did dumb things there. You know why? We went and said Western Sahara, and then I go read Western Sahara was never a country in its life.
Yeah, but Morocco, I think it's I think to me, I think it's a fair argument because Morocco and apartheid South Africa and Israel and Palestine, we couldn't move away due to our historical relations to say until Western Sahara is free because up to now they are still fighting. There is up and down.
Yeah.
Palestine is the whole thing. I think it's historical background until now to say that aspect. But what I'm trying to say is that our trade in the continent has changed. We have changed the game, but it's very slow.
Mm.
And we are only trading with South Africa.
Yeah.
We are only trading with South Africa. We are only trading with a bit of Botswana, but mainly South Africa.
Mm.
Mainly SACU. Not even SADC.
Mm.
Mainly SACU. And that is a bit dangerous. It's a bit dangerous because... If you take Namibia, you take South Africa, you take China.
Mm. You take EU, because the EU most loves being there as number, I think, number two after South Africa.
Yeah, no, you bring in the EU.
Yeah.
But I want to take these three first. You take Namibia, you take China, you take South Africa. Then you ask to say, in terms of trade arrangement, who is more advanced?
Mm.
At the international level, we are told it's a win-win situation. But you also know to say this is the size of the country is small and all these things.
Mm.
But the question is that when you wake up tomorrow and China say, colleagues, I want to buy uranium at this price.
Mm.
If you don't want, we have a new agreement with Canada and Kazakhstan, or we have reached our uranium strategy. Do you know that China has a uranium strategy?
Mm.
Do you know that they have a uranium strategy? Now,
you know that Russia has stockpiled uranium for the next 50 years, David.
Yeah, no. Then South Africa say, no, guys, we are selling you electricity at this price.
Yeah.
But we know we are in pain because of the sanction, for example.
Mm.
Or we have upgraded our infrastructure. You can also hear that we don't have load shedding anymore.
Mm. For the past year, that's actually very impressive from them.
No, they are doing well.
Yeah.
Get this this price. You either take it or leave it.
Mm.
What is our leverage?
It's a good thing you cited that.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Yes.
The other international relations guy earlier this afternoon on the radar cited that as well.
Oh.
No one around in SADC, around South Africa, has leverage on South Africa.
Yeah.
Meaning no one can be in a strong position to demand certain terms.
Now, I'm always telling people to say, it's like a human relationship.
Mm.
You don't need to have one friend. You must have at least three or four.
Yeah.
Because
bounced them all off.
The friendship are not forever. People do not know this.
Yeah.
We call each other brothers and brothers. you know when you read history. You know when you read history, the guy who was contracted by the US to build railways and some of the industries in the Middle East.
Mm.
It's the father of Osama bin Laden. You know who trained
him? So he's a rich man. He was a rich man.
He was a rich man. He was getting all the tenders and he said, no, this is our guy in the Middle. We have a guy in the Middle East.
Yeah.
But what happened? 9/11 and all these things. But we are not saying we are going to that extent. We are just telling you to say friendship is when we are benefiting.
Mm.
But when there is a most beautiful, most attractive, most new product, people are going to take you down.
Mm.
And it's going to be a regret if we are not using this time to build.
Mm.
Because they are getting us on their shoulders. China can say, tomorrow, we have a new partner, or they just pull out, for example.
Yeah.
We are going to cry.
And on the red meat.
Yeah. But if we pull out, the red thing is going to be a big impact. It can be an impact at some portion, but it will not change their mode of operation.
Mm.
But to us, we are finished.
Mm. It's a worry, David,
because
when we look at even like this three position, three positions that this book gives, for some reason, the sustainable economic dimension always stays sort of like it's like a never ending, you know, that never ending projects that you get on school.
Yeah.
That you always go like, why are we getting projects and projects and, you know, the continuous assessments.
Yeah.
And then they don't end.
It's a whole module.
Okay, that one. That one. So, and you always ask the question, now when do I stop learning?
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing has been, we will forever stay in that potential basket. Mm-hmm. The basket that, what's the guy's name? Wamkele Mene from AFCFTA has said, Africa must stop thinking of the potentials and stop thinking of itself as the potentials. But the evidence seems to be more reassuring than the revolutionizing or revolutionary perspective that you highlighted a little bit earlier. Because we are getting the pep talk by new presidents across the continent, by even authoritarian presidents and military juntas. But you only see limited changes.
No, it's limited, calculated, and very, very, very slow. Because if you are saying you want to change in your economic arrangement, in your political arrangement, in whatever you want in life, the main thing that you need to think of, there are stakeholders within any grouping. they are comfortable stakeholders within any grouping.
Mm.
And when you are changing, it means that even their bread and butter will change.
Yeah.
It's up to you now to stay. At what extent you are going to offend them, at what extent you are going to work together with.
Yeah.
Because change does not mean that you just move this mic from here to here.
Mm.
When you are moving it...
Which is a natural event, a natural phenomenon.
Dwayne is pulling it because he has been depending on that system for 36 years.
Yeah.
That's why it's quite important. If you look at leaders who really brought about changes, look at the guy of Singapore, the prime minister.
Lim Kuan Yew.
Yeah.
Lim Kuan Yew. Yeah.
Yeah. When he started, the first thing that he worked on,
take
out corruption, deal with governance.
Mm.
Because it start and end with leadership. That is what he did. And the guys came to say, no, Lim Kuan Yew, we have even been together. We have been in the, we struggle for this. We were even at the same school.
Mm.
He said, this is what we are going to do. It's a framework. And it's long term. And if we did this right, then we bring it here.
Mm.
When we bring it here, we bring it to infrastructure, we bring it to the people. Then people were shocked to say, how come a country that does not have resources, depends on tourism, a country does not
and have, shipping, tourism and shipping,
does not have resources, build the high level of technological infrastructure, build the best relationship in the world, economical relationship, engage into productive diplomacy, because they make sure that everything must be beneficial.
Mm.
And they also made sure that the people themselves, they are advanced with the right courses and all this. They got the basics right.
Mm.
But if you look at the history of Singapore, there have been resistance.
Yeah.
There has always been resistance when you are bringing changes. There has always been those guys who want to take you down because you are taking the bread out of their mouth. Even if they have the bigger piece than almost everybody.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why that is the only way. With our trade, as long as we are giving hugs to our friends, we are giving hugs to our brothers in diplomacy, we must continue evaluating.
Mm.
Because economic diplomacy is about numbers.
Mm.
We are no more in political relationships. We must continue evaluating to say, what is working, what is not working?
Mm.
Was it last year or 2024 where SA changed some of its embassies? Was it in Bulgaria or Hungary, those two countries?
I think it was last year.
Yeah, then they say, no, this is not a productive, we're going to deal with you from a consular or from the neighbor, because we are calculating the cost. And a monitoring and evaluation of economic diplomatic impact on Namibia will assist us.
Mm.
To say, you are posted in which country? In Kazakhstan, just for an example. You have been there, you build relationship, cultural relationships. Then we bring you to say, apart from only money, numbers, and investment that come from that country, what is the necessity of our relationship?
Mm.
Are we at the time of building, what are we getting from that country? You are a friend of Russia. Russia assisted us with AK-47, Assault Rifle, during the liberation. Apart from that now, because we don't need it anymore, what other things are coming? For? Okay, there's training for a doctor. Let us maybe.
There's now tourism coming from Russia.
Tourism. They are good with the geochemist. They are good with nuclear.
They can potentially help us with our nuclear program.
Then you can say, no, it's good. Maybe you can just intensify.
Yeah.
Then you come to Africa. There are some countries that you don't know. What are we getting from there?
Mm.
Why can't we just operate this one? Because we are saving cost, or you just need to advance.
Mm.
Because if we don't do that, our economic diplomacy, we are going to run out of money. And it's not literally cash running out.
Mm.
The numbers are not going to balancing. You spend more money in looking for money, then you are losing it in failing to achieve what you want to achieve because you don't have a plan.
Or you don't know if you achieve this.
Yeah, if you achieve it, you are still guessing. And you're also losing the money through illicit financial flow.
Yeah.
And you're also losing money through trade deficit. Now, coming back to Africa Continental Free Trade Area, the successful implementation of Africa Continental Free Trade Area, if it achieves its objective, it's going to make Africa a very powerful continent. All the external countries that trade with Africa, they are going to negotiate at one term. Do you know that if African countries are selling uranium, they're not selling at the same price.
Yeah.
If I'm selling gold, we are not selling the same gold. If the gold that is being bought from Namibia is not the same price that is being bought at
Ghana.
It's not the same time, the same price that they bought from DRC.
Mm.
Because if international trade is saying at the global market is almost 500, I mean almost 5,000 US dollar per ounce, you will find different prices.
Mm.
That is why people say the minister of minerals in South Africa, who is the guy?
Is it Gwede?
Yeah, Gwede. People say, David, why do you like Gwede? I say, no, Gwede is retiring and he's telling the truth. He's nothing to lose. I like listening to him. I like listening to Gwede because he's a guy who is going on retirement. He does not have political ambition.
Mm.
He has experience in mining. He has been experienced in trade union. And he has the mind of Africa. When you listen to Gwede Matashe addressing mining in Damba, then you say, well, this guy is very smart. He said, no, guys, you are telling us to stop coal. Coal is our critical mineral also. Until we come to the point of balancing.
Of the just energy transition.
of just energy transition. What does that tell you? And he also said, we can't trade in different prices if we want to achieve a common goal.
Yeah.
Now, if that happened, most of the countries in Africa are going to become rich. And it's very also difficult to why are you negotiating in something that have international standard?
True.
Why do you have to negotiate? Because if international standard is saying this is here, why do you have to underestimate me because I'm selling from Namibia?
If you know there's an international price there, why must I sell at a Namibian price?
Why do you have to negotiate with me if I sell from at a Namibia level? Do you know that if the resources that Namibia has were in the USA, just in terms of trade balance, you already won. Even if you are selling raw.
Even the miners.
Yeah.
If a mine worker here was based in Canada, it's one of the things that my one sibling cited to me.
Mm.
It was based upon what happened at Marikanda.
Yeah, Marikana. Yeah.
When those miners were shot by the police at that platinum mine.
Mm.
Those guys were just asking for 11,000 to be increased up at least up to 11,000 a month.
Mm.
It's the mine workers, the guys working in the mine shaft, David.
Yeah.
And then that sibling, the brother before me told me, you know what? That mining company would have said yes if that platinum mine was in Canada,
mm-hmm.
where the mine worker could have easily earned, what was it? $6,000. What's $6,000, David? Times at least, I think times 10. That would be 60,000. That's a mine worker.
Yeah.
That's the guy going into the shaft.
Yeah.
Not the engineers, not the other technical, not the guy driving the heavy earth moving.
Not the foreman.
Yeah. None of those guys. Just the guy getting into the shaft. That guy could easily get his $6,000 or $6,000. Right. Let me benchmark the Canadian dollar to the US dollar.
Yeah.
That would easily would have been 70,000-80,000 Namibian dollars.
Yeah, I hear you.
For a mine worker. For the heavy grunt. Mm. The guy on the foot soldier on the ground.
Mm.
So why, and guess what, ne?
Mm.
Platinum gets sold on an international market.
Yeah.
Platinum isn't sold at a South African benchmark price.
Yeah.
It gets shipped out on an international market, international price.
Yeah.
And then the thing is processed at international value addition platforms. So the market technically is there. However, the South African cost is, 11,000 rand is a bit too much.
Yeah.
Now, also, it's a good point that you're highlighting about the standardization thing.
Yeah.
Because primarily, what has been the other cause has been through, what's that thing's name? The connecting the skies, connecting our airports with each other. It's supposed to be my biggest headache.
Yeah.
Since, what's the CEO of Namibia Airports, BC Uirap, once explained, it takes almost 24 hours for you to fly from Windhoek to Sao Tome and Principe.
Yeah.
The capital. The guy from Afriexim Bank who flew here to Windhoek last year, homeboy had to spend 16 hours from Cairo.
Yeah.
David, he's in the continent. He flies 16 hours.
But to go to other continent is more faster.
No, 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 no. If you can buy a ticket now, David.
Yeah.
Ne, fly directly to Frankfurt for 10,000. Guess how much that ticket to Sao Tome and Principe would cost you? Or close to 50,000. And that's a return ticket. So for a shorter flight in the continent. But just because that other thing that you mentioned about the difference between the work that a government is doing and the actual functionary, the actual implementer, which is the private sector guys.
Yeah.
The private sector guys know, but I need to justify my costs of flying Dwight or David to Sao Tome and Principe, or flying Dwight or David to Cairo. I need to justify these costs.
Yeah.
Because I can't fly there with, just because Dwight bought a ticket and now Dwight wants to go there because Dwight feels special because of his ticket. No, they will say, I need 20 Dwights.
No, I hear you. And I think, in infrastructure, and it is a good thing that you brought this topic, because infrastructure are also central to Africa Continental Free Trade Area. You cannot trade. Real trade without a functional railway.
True. Or even with a non-functional road network.
Yeah. You cannot trade, because heavy things, they require trucks and, you know, locomotives. Because that's where you are trading. Because you cannot trade in Maudako Bank, you know, this bank that is carried by anyone when you have conflict. You already see that when trouble comes.
Call the bank, David?
No, it's Maudako. You know, Shuambo, direct translation is that, have you heard? You know, you know when our grannies have problems, they visit each other.
Yeah.
And they're always carrying that thing. They ask you, say, have you heard the Mudakongo? Have you heard? and I realize that that thing, I think it started in Ghana.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I think it's just, people love that. Yeah. Because it's cheap and accessible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But just, that is not a trade. That is not even, it's not even survival. It's just getting the coins.
Yeah.
Trade infrastructure, but these trade infrastructures must also be productive.
Yeah.
Trade investment in trade infrastructure. You can't invest in a trade infrastructure that is not bringing you anything. Because Africa will need that free trade area require transportation. Not the Robito Corridor. No. No, Robito Corridor. No, Robito.
And we realized last week, was it last week or the week before? Yeah, we realized that Lobito Corridor is literally what Bakele Thomas from the Special Technical Committee of the AU on transport infrastructure, where she said literally, guys, stop making the infrastructure jobs so obvious. Stop building the road to the mine.
Yeah, no, you know, because I want somebody to conduct a study, the impact of Lobito Corridor in Africa Continental Free Trade Area. I know there are benefits there. But are the benefits of Lobito Corridor directly to Africans, or they are assisting somebody?
I know it'll directly benefit Zambia, because it'll apparently it shortens the distance.
Yeah.
Because Zambia has three routes. Two routes. The one is through Namibia.
Yeah.
The other one is to Tanzania.
Yeah.
But Tanzania is the older one. It's the old, what's that railway line's name? Tazara
or something. Tazara, yeah.
Yeah. That railway line has been there for eons.
But the things are not internal. Things are connected to airports and
to harbors.
And to harbors.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you want real infrastructure must be Cape to Cairo. Real infrastructure must be, internal within the continent, because the issue of selling extraction of resources. Do you know that up to now, Zambia cannot add full value to its copper? Maybe to make copper wiring. But those are the basics.
Or probably copper. to smelt it to an extent.
Those are the basics of copper.
Yeah.
But full value addition of it. If they were doing full value addition, we wouldn't have a problem with trucks that are always between Ochibarongo, Vavis Bay. This yeah. one, the one that are yeah. competing with seven sitters. And yeah. they're causing a lot of trouble.
Let's say those guys look unstable. Hmm? David, when you get here between yeah. Okahanjane yeah. to the coast,
yeah.
you should see how unstable those trucks look.
Yeah, and that is telling you to say, and the, believe me, you, from 1960
mm.
to today when you are going to Vavis Bay, you see those trucks. They start 1960, that is mm. how it started. 1960, mm. when, 1960s, early 1960 when Zambia started getting independence.
Mm.
Or even before that.
Mm.
But 1960 where you really have, no, we are investing in you so that we can ship out.
Mm.
Until now, they did not stop. Now, if you have to calculate to say, from 1960 to where we are, how many years?
And how much value have they shipped out?
Yeah, because if you take 40 years already, then you add 36.
Yeah.
You speak about...
80 years.
Almost 80 years. You speak about 76.
No. Just make it 20, because that 40 no, years...
I want 1960 to 1990.
Oh, just to 1990, not yeah, to 2000.
No, to 1990. Then you add this 36 years from 1990. Yeah.
yeah.
Then you have around
it's close to 70.
76.
Yeah.
76 years of shipping out copper. How many jobs have we created outside?
By just shipping out. Yeah.
Because how many factories have we maintained, and how many things were left for the Zambian people?
Mm.
Then it's the same question you ask to Zimbabwe, you ask to South Africa, you ask to many other countries. Then you ask to say, South Africa, what have you done?
Mm.
South Africa is a big guy. South Africa, I think the owners of the means of production in South Africa realize they are not going anywhere. That's why value addition in South Africa is better.
Mm.
Because...
it's actually the best example I've seen.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You know, you are a developmental practitioner.
No. But, and you know what's the funny thing there? Yeah, it started primarily, you can call it a racist
but
dimension, because the British were racist against the other European settlers.
Mm, 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 mm.
And you realize, so there was discrimination.
Yeah. Yeah. But Egypt was competing with South Africa.
True.
But South Africa industrialization stood out.
Yeah.
South Africa is the most industrialized country in Africa. Then you take other countries to follow.
Mm.
Zimbabwe, they are just starting now. 20 years of pain. 20 years of pain, then you realize that whether you were in pain or you were not in pain, nobody was going to help you. You have to help yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why they are where they are now. That's why I was even shocked why people are not making noise about it. When Ramaphosa presented at SADC
last week
when presented on SADC, and when you look at the preliminary report of that, to say Zimbabwe is the only country in SADC that reached 7% economic growth, that is telling you to say, if we want to, I'm not literally comparing it to Namibia, but I'm saying
it's very good.
If we want,
it even beats China's numbers.
Yeah, if we want to implement our NDP 6, economists are saying you need around 6% domestic economic growth.
Yeah, to see the real,
for you to create 500,000 jobs, and maybe to reach closer to that.
And it shouldn't be just in mining.
It should not just be in mining. Then the question that we should ask is that Zimbabwe is at 7%. They have done a lot of things. We are not saying we are going to be at 7% if we did what they did.
Yeah.
But what formula are they using? They are cutting the supply.
Mm. They're telling those that need the supply, come open up your shop here.
Come open up. Let's see.
Yeah.
And that is where we want to get into, because if 2027 Zimbabwe has already established, value addition, and also coming up with batteries from lithium, Africa is going to be powered by Zim.
Mm.
It's going to be powered by Zim, and that's going to create a lot of money, because if they are doing that, who else want to waste the cost of foreign exchange if you are moving toward
AfCFTA?
AfCFTA. Now the problematic part of things is here. Africans can trust SADC. How do they call it? SADC partnership agreement with EU.
Mm.
Africa can trust AGOA.
Mm.
Africa can trust...
I have a sneaky suspicion Trump will throw AGOA into the toilet pot again. To be honest with you, David.
Okay. Africa, we'll get to that. Can trust zero tariff with China. Africa can trust its engagement
with India.
With Japan. But Africa cannot trust Africa Continental Free Trade Area to reach certain things.
Yeah.
Ask yourself a question to say, if all the head of state have agreed... Why until now Namibia did not subscribe to Pan-Africa Payment and Settlement System? Why not more than 20 countries subscribe to that?
Mm.
Kenya is doing it. Rwanda is doing it. Why are we not doing it?
Mm.
If all countries or...
South Africa? Let me ask you.
No, South Africa did not.
I know why.
Mm.
It's our banks. It's South African banks.
And you know who's calling the shots?
Yeah.
South Africa now. South Africa is strategically positioned because... South Africa can benefit from BRICS directly.
Yeah. It is. Do you know that South Africa is the doorway for Indian multinationals and Chinese multinationals?
And
American.
And US multinationals.
And American multinationals.
Yeah, you are right.
And Brazilian multinationals.
South Africa is a definition of a friend to all and enemy to none.
Yeah. Namibia is doing it in spirit. We are doing it in spirit.
No, South Africa is a good friend of, it's a good definition of a friend to all and enemy to none.
Yeah.
One thing that you can praise is that, it was able to move across all these blocks. Either it's continental or international.
Mm.
You are in G20. You are hosting your own continent. That is, you are very powerful.
Mm.
You are there with Africa.
Mm.
You understand what I mean? It's like you are hosting your father in your own house.
Yeah. And then you are even telling him what are the rules.
What are the rules?
Yeah.
On top of that, it almost got into the G8. It was
that was where the thing began was last year. Trump didn't want.
No. This year it was disinvited.
Yeah, because the US is this year
the
host of G20.
Yeah.
But last year the invite was sent to South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, there's that in the before the G20 takes place, there's another meeting where the extended guys get invited to the G8.
Yeah.
And then they can be part of listening and seeing and having contributions and insights.
Yeah.
And then the US said no. South Africa must not be there. And then Ramaphosa said sharp.
Mm.
I will wait for all of you guys in South Africa.
No, I've seen that. But it has leveraged very well. That's why it did not beg.
Yeah.
It said, no, you guys are giving us sanctions. We are not going to fight with you, but we have our good friends here.
Mm.
That's why it was almost 50-50. There was no disruption.
Mm.
That is the power of economic diplomacy.
Mm.
That's why you say, no, let's keep the guy. We can change our diplomas and all these things. But what I want to say is that there are things that are not really being spoken about to say, why are we moving slow to Africa within the free trade area?
Yeah.
Because who is going to be disrupted? But anyhow, there are going to be benefits and also challenges within Africa Continental Free Trade Area. And maybe the other thing that we need to speak about is what the scholars of law have said that day when it comes to constitutionalism and also Africa Continental Free Trade Area, to say you do not own the rules of engagement in international trade.
Yeah.
You did not contribute much to your constitution, although we are saying it's our constitution, but there are some principles that you don't change. If you ask any lawyer today to say why we should not amend the key chapters, such as Chapter 7 of the Constitution, they'll just tell you, no, that one cannot be changed. You can only add to it.
Mm.
But asking yourself a question to say...
Okay, for the listeners, David, what does Chapter 3 say?
No, Chapter 3 of the Namibian Constitution has the Bills of Right, and that is where you have property.
Yeah.
And property...
Which is personal ownership, yeah.
Yeah, it's at the center of resources.
Yeah.
And that is also, they call it the heart of the constitution.
Yeah.
But if something is man-made, who say it cannot be changed?
Of course.
If constitution can be drafted after a country got its independence.
Of course.
Why can't it be amended?
Yeah.
Those are some of the critical things, because some of the things you are just taught to say, don't even think about it, don't even dream of it, because you are not going to enter there. And also to say, some of the laws are the ones that are holding us back in getting what you want. You can't go anywhere without the framework. You can't go anywhere without laws that are acquiring you to do that. When we say, when you go to a mining conference and say, investors, Namibia must benefit from their minerals.
Yeah.
Investor will just ask a question to say,
okay,
whose money?
Are you bringing money to this? Are those Namibians bringing the money?
Whose money, and how are they going to do that?
Yeah.
Namibians must be prioritized. Yes, must be prioritized. But what is the law saying? The law is not forcing an investor to do anything.
Yeah. It's not putting obligations on them.
It's mutual beneficial to say, yes, you can do it. You can give. You can't just be greedy.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no law which is saying, in Namibia, when you come to Namibia, it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. When you come to Namibia, you can't go below 15%.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can't go below 20%. Or you can't operate at 80% for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
You must develop capacity. And you let people take over gradually, because that is not yours.
Yeah.
You got something, but let's us engage on that. But if we are speaking about Africa Continental Free Trade Area, but you have a company that is coming from Russia, just for example, owning 90% of your resources, who are you to tell that company to sell your final product here? you can't do it. And you don't have any power for that unless you have clear legal framework. That is what the constitutionalists have said, because
upgrade the constitution.
Upgrade the constitution. Make sure that your legal framework are talking to each other.
Yeah,
and also make sure that you look at people first in coming up with those things. Otherwise, it's going to be a very long journey.
It'll always be a long one, David. Because I mean, one of the concerns that we obviously started off from, which was our philosophic question of, where were we asked about this thing? Now, at the heart of everything, right, has always been how Namibia can try and grow certain things. But then there's a reality on the ground in terms of what growth you want to see. First thing that I want us to understand also as fellow Namibians, specifically with regarding how we build infrastructure. Yes, the roads are lovely. Thank you, Roads Authority. Yes, certain particular towns have certain things going for them. Other towns don't have got things going for them easily or quite so well. What do I mean by that? Infrastructure, once again. The concern has now been how do we balance the development dimension that the book obviously speaks about, or will speak about, or is highlighting.
Yeah.
Just to be honest, I haven't touched my copy yet.
No, it's even a soft copy. There's a soft copy now.
I know there's a soft copy. You know, I didn't touch my book back at home yet, because it is an interesting read. The development angle will never go away where we'll one day say, okay, we've done with the development. Now we just improve and maintain systems, infrastructure, and processes and the likes. We will continuously always be that kid that's trying to play catch up the whole time, trying to reach, you know, where the grown up or the teenagers now currently are. We will always just play that catch up role. Our concern, David, it's a good thing that you highlighted the value addition component. But let's, for example, say, there's a food Namibia produces, but Equatorial Guinea does not produce this food. We can ship this food, whether it's canned, processed, semi-processed, packaged, already fried, and you know, and put in its wrapping. We can ship it, because one of the easiest things sometimes that I've seen, even in the local retailers here in Windhoek, the easiest product to sell between two countries has been food items.
Yeah, it's food item. And no, you are correct. You are absolutely correct.
Yeah.
You know, the the intention of Africa Continental Free Trade Area, and I think when we get it, is keeping money circulating in the continent. You know, the beauty of keeping money circulating in the continent is like you are crediting the real build of the economy, like the Namibian informal sector.
Yeah.
It's like you are crediting the real build of the economy, because if you speak about food processing, it's better for you to sell products to Angola that can add value, then you can buy it back from Angola. Then selling raw meat outside the continent.
Yeah.
And you are going to buy count or meat or whatever you can do. You can extend to any other products. Because if we start selling with each other more, then we can develop our skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when we develop our skills, we are exchanging ideas, then we are trading as one.
Yeah.
Because if just one example to say, the biggest refinery of oil in the continent is Dangote. Namibia is producing oil. When we don't have a refinery, we don't need to sell crude oil to international market. Let's go to Nigeria and speak with this guy to say, finalize the product, stabilize the economy of the continent. The oil price will go down. When the oil price go down, who is going to be upgraded? It's the ordinary people.
Yeah.
You know, it's very painful when you see a very hardworking taxi driver with a wife that is working in the informal sector, for example, doing everything they can, but they are just moving in the circle.
Yeah.
Because the standard where they are is blocked. It's blocked to say, you are only going to reach here. You can work hard very much. You can buy six taxis, but you are only going to reach here because, number one, it's tax of taxi. then the oil price.
Yeah. And the tax in the oil price.
Then the electricity is going to hit you.
The tax in the oil, electricity also.
Then the parts. The parts.
Which is also tax in those parts.
The parts that you have to, either you are buying them from here, they are not from here.
Yeah.
Then you are working so hard, but you are not moving because the system is blocking you. That's why we say if you want to, one thing that you can do is energy, stabilize the price. Then we can get things done.
Another dimension that pops up from what I've seen. Okay, before we actually continue, let's first get Warikandwa's overview, some of the things that he cited there, because that will also be a springboard for us to work from.
Definitely.
Because the nice thing that has been the juggle, dear listeners, has been how do we balance the objectives that would come from your constitution as a country, your government's economic policies, meaning how does your government ensure that, you know, we actually see the real benefit materializing for all of us? And then also a dimension in terms of how do we participate in AFCFTA? Because it's nice sending a ship with a container. Anyone can do that. It's easy if you have the product to sell and fill the container. But you can't just have one container on the ship. You must have a ship full of containers. You must own a ship. There you go. So, and that's also about connecting ports on the African continent. We've got to first listen to Warikandwa's particular overview. We'll be back after this, dear listeners, and we get on the other side of this discussion. We'll come back and we'll dissect it further from that point.
I just want to give perhaps a brief overview into the reasoning, of course, that informed quite a number of submissions that were advanced by different scholars coming from different parts of the world. And, you know, I must say, when I say from different parts of the world, I mean it, because we had contributors from the United Kingdom. We had contributors from all over Africa, Nigeria, even. We had even contributors from Sudan, that is South Sudan in particular. And of course, some of them were actually policymakers who have served in a ministerial capacity in their countries, that is South Sudan in this particular instance. We also had people who contributed from South Africa. We had contributors from Namibia, Zimbabwe. So the cast was very broad. And of course, the reason for this particular approach was to try to interrogate the role and place of constitutionalism in the scope of development within the African continent. Perhaps if I embark from pointing out that, you know, traditionally when you think about a constitution, it has traditionally been associated as a document that largely focuses on social political rights. And of course, not so much dealing with socio-economic constructs, as it were. But of course, in our context now, having seen, of course, this particular opportunity given rise to by the advent of the African Continental Free Trade Area and its primary objectives as set out in Articles 3 and 4 of the founding agreement to the African Continental Free Trade Area. And of course, informed by the founding African, you know, luminaries in Pan-Africanism, as Dr. Karisebe alluded to. And here we are talking about people like, you know, the Kwame Nkrumahs of this world, and of course, Mwalimu Julius Nyerere from Tanzania, and their vision that they had for a unitary African, you know, continent with the common objectives that are equally shared amongst the countries on the continent. Obviously, we needed the authors or contributors to be dealing with this, you know, salient or fundamental developmental objectives. And in that regard, we had to look at a number of things that we expected the contributors to deal with, issues that related to market reforms and what we consider as economic realities that, of course, are facing Africa. Africa, largely, of course, because of the effects of colonialism, perhaps would have had different geographical zones, and, of course, which inform a number of you know, patterns and trajectories that relate to colonial shifts that inform constitutional shifts, even in the context of what we have saw or what we have seen in the years 1990 and so forth. And so we started then seeing that consciousness of saying constitutions must have or must incorporate issues relating to market economic principles, which we classify as economic constitutionalism, and of course the desire to protect private property, but of course in a responsible manner that perhaps just doesn't spell out capitalism, neoliberalism, or just Keynesian and neo-Keynesian, you know, theories, but does also allow for the inclusive and transformative growth and development within the African context. And this is what we then see encapsulated, of course, in the vision of the African Continental Free Trade Area and, of course, the African Union Agenda 2063. So from this perspective, of course, the book then largely had 26 solid chapters, which it tried to subsume some of these things that are I've alluded to. And key amongst the objectives was to ensure we are very practical and sensitive to the desire or need to eradicate poverty. Again, which are principles that you find implicit in the African Union Agenda 2063. And of course, by extension, the United Nations Sustainable Development goals, of course, implicit in the 2030, you know, agenda as well. So obviously, we wanted authors to deal with the legal frameworks, the aspects of weak economic fundamentals that are, you know, widespread on the continent, and of course, to ask ourselves how we can deal with, you know, the widespread poverty that is implicit. And when you think about widespread poverty, you think about economic empowerment that one could associate yet with the SMEs, small and medium enterprises, which of course are a critical component and vehicle of Africa's developmental agenda. So all these concepts you tend to find subsumed in the different chapters, and I'm just going to quickly go through those particular chapters and then of course draw the conclusions on the significance of the same. And of course, trying to understand the significance of what we call resource governance on the continent. That is how our constitutions must be in a position to deal with issues of how to handle land, how we deal with the extractive industries, and of course, how this translates to how we improve or shape our revenue streams, and of course, our overall macroeconomic ability as a continent. And of course, I think it's timely that we actually have this book being launched, considering what has been happening in the extractive natural resources sector in Namibia, of course, in many countries in the region. You look at Botswana as well. Critical questions being asked around how these natural resources can be used for beneficiation processes, etc. So then you find that we had the first chapter of this book, this very important book, and of course it tried to look at constitutionalism and of course the concept of sustainable economic development on the African continent. And I think this is an important chapter because we do accept Africa is endowed with a lot of natural resources, but there is little that really is cascading to the ordinary person on the ground, yet there are a lot of resources which are sustaining development in other quarters of the world. Of course, I'm not saying, or we are not suggesting as authors and contributors that there mustn't be that, you know, trade relation that is taking place with other, you know, countries in the world. But ideally, we must see a growth in the share of intra-Africa trade, which allows for the retention of course, the proceeds of trade as opposed to externalization, which does not, you know, change or transform the African narrative on the continent. So we set out that particular premise to show and point out that effective constitutionalism must be underpinned by that notion of sustainable economic development and growth on the continent, and not just resource pillaging or bleeding to other, you know, continents, as it were. And of course, in this regard, we also then proceeded to chapter two, in which Professor Gerda van Niekerk from the University of Limpopo wrote a chapter on what we call financial sustainability as a requisite for sustainable economic development. So in this particular instance, we do appreciate, of course, that without financial stability in any particular continent, context, and jurisdiction, then we can't talk about development. And of course, she looks at a myriad of issues that, which, of course, we could relate to, considering the strength of our economic, of our currencies, as it were, considering also issues of financial inclusion in that regard. So that was another important chapter, which, of course, built on from the introduction that we had set in the first chapter. Then, of course, the third chapter dealt with what we call constitutionalism and sustainable economic development, but with primary focus on South Sudan and East African Community. And this was written importantly by former ministers, that is James Alec Karang and Joseph Zheng Akech, who served one actually as a governor, I think, of the Reserve Bank, that side in South Sudan, and one as a minister. So this is not essentially chapters that are written by wishful thinkers, but by people who have practical experience in African governance. I think one would want to have time to really delve into that particular chapter. And then, of course, chapter four dealt with legislative energy, aspects of climate change and sustainable development within the context of Kenya. And this was written by Mayombe Oduba. And then, of course, we had chapter five, police discretion in the arrest and detention of children in South Africa. Of course, taking into cognizance that it cannot be sustainable development without rights protection, in particular human rights. So we had from chapter five, chapter six, these chapters dealt with human rights and sustainable economic development. Chapter six being sustainable human rights in the context of Nigeria. Chapter seven, importance of participation in South Africa, which was written by Professor Annelie de Man from Wits University. And of course, we had Chapter 8, Implications of the Right to Development for So-Called Slum or Informal Settlements and Policy.
And that's where we ended the particular discussion. As you heard, he ended at Chapter 8, but actually the book has got 24 chapters. I just jogged my memory once again to look at it. It even, the last chapter, Chapter 24, technically has a COVID viewpoint and an overview on it, or, you know, it delves into the dimension of COVID and COVID's impact. But actually, David, let's start from that backwards to front dimension.
Yeah.
The COVID pandemic was something technically, which is something Africa did not create. Yet we were literally at the back end of actually being able to have any leverage in a global medical response.
You know that we did not create a lot of things. They're just being brought to us.
That is true. There's not even an argument there.
Yeah.
But that is true, yeah. Because at the heart of that was the famous phrase that our president also used, President Kaingop, vaccine.
Hmm.
What did he say? Vaccine. That was vaccine apartheid. Was that the phrase? But it was a negative thing, primarily pointing towards how not just the EU but also North America went and said, no. We will first inoculate our people before we start selling any excess.
But it's a logical thing to do.
it is the logical thing to do.
It's a logical thing to do, especially where you have a continent that is not even trying. But we have come up with sanitizer. I think, is it NASTO, University of Namibia? I think sanitizer, we have managed to come up with sanitizers. No, you know, it's a slow progress. Sanitizers. Yeah, but with that, it's a rational thing to do. When you have food, you make sure that your kids eat first.
Yeah.
That's a rational thing to do.
When you make it, you make it for yourself first.
Yeah, the problem only came when it has to be bought.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is where the problem comes in, because the price is also not the same.
Yeah.
You may also end up getting the cheap one. That's why...
So you can never guarantee quality.
Yeah, you can never guarantee quality. That's why I see a lot of people... I had a lot of argument with people who say, no, this thing of... just before you go to the economic part, this thing of COVID-19, COVID vaccine is a mark of a beast and all these things.
Mm.
I told them to say, even if it was so, what option do you have? What option of what alternative do we have if 80% of the medicine that you have in your hospital you take them from outside?
Yeah.
If they want to do anything to you, whether you have quality check assessment or not, it can be done because that is what happened to you when you have nothing, when you have little contribution to the product.
Mm.
You can't say I don't want Johnson, I want to be vaccinated by which one? This one from Russia,
Sputnik
or whatsoever. You don't. A beggar does not have any option. We may complain to say no. People are putting chips on us. The question is that what alternative do we have?
Yeah,
because had we have alternative, we would have a choice. Therefore, the question of traditional medication always come in to say how fast are we integrating this into modern medication, because we realize that what happened into other people's labs, we don't know. We just consume. I challenge medical practitioners and also medical researchers at one point to say, compare the diseases that we have in Africa. Go to the hospital today. Go to Katutura and also state hospital.
Mm.
Not really to go there and check the people. Just go and see where the world is, to say what are some of the causes of these things.
Yeah.
What are these, not chemicals that we are eating every day? Are these not some of the things that we put into our body that we do not even know?
Mm.
But coming to your aspect of COVID-19, economy will always be disrupted by economic shocks at the unseen
or societal shocks
or societal shock.
Yeah.
Then the question is that, are you prepared in that situation?
Yeah.
And I'm always telling people to say, you don't say, guys, please wait. We don't want Ebola now. We don't want COVID-19 now. Yeah. We don't want people to fight because you want to develop.
Yeah.
The challenges are always going to be there.
Yeah.
But what's going to define you, and what you continue to say, what's going to define you is that what did you do in the times of challenges?
Yeah.
When Russia and Ukraine started fighting, when Trump take down Khamenei, and Iran started bombing each other, Zimbabwe went to 7%. They did not look outside and complain. They say, what can we do?
And they've been sanctioned, no? The whole time.
After sanction of 20 years, over 20 years.
Yeah.
Then they say they went to 7% economic growth. Other countries, they also did very well. Africa was having the best.
Okay, right. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
We come back there from the quick break. Sorry, David, just where we you left off.
Yeah. What I was indicating is that challenges will always be there. If you want to achieve Africa Continental Free Trade Area, we can achieve it with all the things which are happening. The question is that how do we react to those situations?
Mm.
Because the world will never be as you want it to be. The question is that are you being what you have to be to achieve what you want to get into, what you want to achieve. That is how we is economic positioning. We just need to position ourselves. Otherwise, we always have. And I'm always saying this. I have raised it. I think with BON, I've raised this at different occasion to say, why do we always need to give a full page of reason? Of outside, we know our economy is vulnerable, but can we really look at ourselves and ask ourselves a question to say, David, what have you done wrong?
Mm.
So we want to tell me that I was reading a newspaper today.
If Russia doesn't attack Ukraine, then we'll be fine.
You want to tell me that when Ochikuku did not have a financial manager with a certificate for over 20 years.
Mm.
Then money get lost, for example. We are going to blame Russia. Those are our internal things.
Yeah.
Those are things that we need to work in. And believe me, I was reading a newspaper today, and I was at a training.
Mm.
Then one of my colleague just told me to say, no, look, they are advertising the post now for Oshikuku.
Serious?
Yeah.
Serious?
Yeah. No, but
does that mean the guy was released? From his job.
Yeah, he was just extended for two months because he was already retired, apparently, then he was extended for 2 months.
Yeah.
That's why he was caught. But that is also show a lot about accountability.
Yeah.
And the requirements are too high compared to where he was. It shows a lot about accountability. What I'm trying to say is that things that we can change them at home.
Yeah.
Other one, they can deal with the global aspect.
Yeah.
If we have to manage, you have to make sure that we have better laws at home and we implement them. That is our internal thing.
Mm.
If we have to make sure that we strategically position ourselves when we are going to negotiate, that is our thing. If we want to be, if we are supporting the private sector with capital, if we are not overlooking at the informal sector, that is our internal thing.
Mm.
That one we can handle. But if you just want to say, no, the economy went below 3% because Russia, they are fighting with Ukraine.
America decided to attack Iran.
Trump make a lot of decision because he did
and
not
no
wake up
trusts,
in a good mood.
And no one trusts Trump.
So,
and you were like, and you had control. You think you had control over the guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and what did you do? I mean, because otherwise, really... If an economist tend to come to me and say that, I look at him to say, you are an economist who got theoretical knowledge, good reasoning, but you are not practical enough.
Mm.
You are not practical enough because you are still speaking about things that you don't have control over. Because if there were things that you have control over, mention them and what can you do?
Mm.
Yeah. It's like you go that time, you fail, you go home. and you're complaining to your parents and say, no, examination was difficult. But other people are passing. Other people have passed. There's even an A.
Yeah. You'll even find a best performing student there between the whole bunch of you.
Yeah. But you have all people, you have 10 of them are performing very well, but they're saying, no, that teacher did not teach us well. The exam was very...
Now, why did the other people pass? Why,
that is the question.
Yeah.
Why people are progressing when we are giving that reason? So you want to tell me that you were taught outside or in a different class or what?
Yeah.
You're even sitting in front.
Did anything stick? But yeah, David, there's a good point. You highlighted already, resource governance that Warikandwa also mentioned.
Yeah.
Which obviously was part of your Zimbabwe reference.
Yeah.
Also the 7% increase.
Yeah.
The dimension obviously of this has been the, you know, how resource governance also in a Namibian context has taken place. I mean, this book and its discussion comes at the most timeliest dimension, David, because we have been trying to understand since the oil discoveries were announced in 2022. Would we have to update, for example, like our Mining Act and the Petroleum Act?
Mm-hmm.
But the Petroleum Act's current update speaks towards moving a office from the ministry to the presidency, which doesn't really speak to any kind of, what's that word? Not trust. Mm. What's the other word, Tochman? It doesn't speak to sort of like the positive revolutionary thinking.
No, you are correct.
Because if we look at that particular move that the president herself and through Minister Amutse basically brought on earlier this, no, back in last year, not earlier this year, back in last year. Listen, moving an office, I don't care about that. That's an operational thing.
Mm.
What I care about is, why are you worried about this office? Mm. Is it a scenario potentially of showing that the overall Ministry of Mines and Energy and Mines Industries, Mines and Energy is untrustworthy to run this resource?
Mm.
Because remember, this resource still gets mined. I've never heard of a presidency where mining a specific resource is under this a presidency. But obviously we can be first in Namibia. Yeah. We can be revolutionary in that dimension. The other concern has obviously also been how, in my eyes, we have not changed the view of mining sector's particular importance in the Namibian landscape, because we have extraction at the one end, which is mining and agriculture, and we have services, but we haven't connected the bridge between these two industries between these two segments of our economy, and we are just
asking those are very real observation.
Yeah.
And resource governance, as you have mentioned, is a very important thing. The other thing is also there's an aspect of to say, you know, the system, the structure, if it is working, that is good. If it is working, that is good.
Yeah.
To say we don't need to say we want a pink cat, as long as it's cat mouse.
Yeah.
Either is we want to have a black cat, white, yellow, or it does not have a color.
Yeah.
As long as it's
cat mouse. Or it's invisible.
Because the argument of petroleum bill, people, you know where the central argument is.
Mm.
A lot of people, they are arguing to say, no, it must not be. It must not be in the hand of the presidency. It must be who it must go back to the minister, which is a fair argument. But the question is ownership and who is in charge.
Yeah.
But if you go to the broader aspect to say, what can we do to make sure that it works for everybody? Because at the end of the day, is that reaching the intention of doing that or going to make things worse?
Mm.
Because most of the time, the process, the system, the structure, if it's productive, Let us see.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Namibian mining. I went to the mining expo, and I don't want to discourage anybody.
Mm.
I look at the business people there. I look at the big machines.
Mm.
I look at the investors.
Mm.
I look at
You know that it's the richest, but the most low key expo ever in Namibia.
Yeah, very, 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 very.
The guys don't wear expensive clothing.
Yeah.
You just know these guys.
Then ask yourself a question: where are these guys? Where are they based?
Yeah.
What is their background? What materials are they using?
Mm. And they don't play politics.
Yeah, they don't play politics.
They just talk
business. And you are asking yourself to say, Namibia youth go to the mining expo to check. You know, most of the business, and I'm not insulting anybody, most of the business that we have so far in the mining sector in Namibia, if we are not partnering with extraction, we have connector, fixers, and consultancy. That is most of the time that where we are into.
Yeah.
Or maybe supplying of...
So it's more on the periphery.
Or maybe maybe I can order material and supply.
Yeah.
But not really in the real thing.
Yeah.
I was shocked, man, but I realized, no, these guys are very good at doing business. I think I need to think about that also in the future.
No.
There are guys who specialize in... how do you call these things that are destroying...
crashes?
Yeah, they're just destroying the whole mountain.
A crash, demolition.
Yeah, demolishing.
Yeah.
To say, no, this guy is just an expert in explosive. To say, no, my business is when things get tough, they call me.
Mm.
Then there's another guy who are selling tires, a tire of 75,000.
And if you guys don't know how big that tire is, yeah. David showed us here in the studio. It's basically 2 meters high, ne?
Yeah, it's taller than me.
Yeah.
I'm one of the tallest people in Namibia.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Stop getting the but you get to the point.
Yeah. Not that David is worth the 75,000. I mean, we're just saying the tire is that size.
But what I'm indicating to you is that this is a real business. Now, let's now talk about inclusivity and competitive of Namibian people to say, support Namibian young people to enter that space. Who is going to give you? You don't need to give me 75,000 because that is just one tire.
Yeah.
And that is not business. Two tires is also not business. Now, how can we make sure that Namibians, they get into this real sector of mining?
Mm.
Not as a consultancy. The guys who are lawyers, they are so lucky. The guys who are into investment are so lucky, and they can do consultancy and all the scene to connect.
Mm.
But the real business that can say how many people you can recruit. Because a consultancy, you need just 2 experts or 3 experts or 4. If you are a lot. But the real business is not in our hands. I met one guy who is... he's also connected in Zambia, selling just this copper thing and all these things. And I asked myself a question to say, yes, is mining expo is for us. So how do we get in?
Yeah.
Because you can really find young people who really want to enter into that space, but it's too high level. It's the way it is now. Do we have a space that can allow them to get into?
Yeah. It's a concern, David, because we always look at the...
Because public engagement, you can go and engage. But ask any... Maybe student for internship. Yes, they can get internship and all these things.
But then it'll be like 5 students.
Yeah. Scholarships, yes, you can get. You can be employed. But can you really engage into that business?
If they can send the media on an excursion to go look at a factory somewhere in Russia like us. Like, and then one of us turned the yellow cake upside down. We were like, whoa. It's yellow cake, please.
It's yellow. Yeah. No, you ask those questions really, but maybe we are getting there. Maybe we are getting, because just observe mining expo. I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Mm. It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
The question is that, is that really going to make sure that,
we achieve
what we want to achieve?
Yeah. And basically what this book basically says, you've got to look at things chapter by chapter, starting from resource governance.
Yeah.
The aim being primarily, how do you govern a resource?
Yeah.
Zimbabwe seems to have been the better case scenario.
Yeah. And you are asking yourself a question to say, the mining has promised 18,000 jobs.
So far.
They are promised by 2030.
Yeah. Currently we only have 8,000.
They went in the report to say how many were created. But you are looking at the pace. Maybe it's coming.
But David, here's the concern that I have with Ministry of Justice. Yeah. Ministry of Justice has to tell us, Namibians, every 3 months, every month even, every how long of Okay, it can be every 3 months and every month. Every 3 months and every month.
Ministry of Justice has to tell us
how many jobs, how many vacancies are created, how many vacancies become vacant, how many vacancies are occupied, and, you know, how many Namibians are there that can be matched to each vacancy. The Ministry of Justice needs to have this, read this database.
Yeah.
Whereby all of us are registered. But here's the concern, David. I keep referencing Statistics South Africa, which is a ministry on itself. Independent ministry.
Mm.
It's a ministry that can ask any ministry in South Africa and demand those data sets.
Mm.
And then it just releases data of the Namibian economy. Up until the day, David, mm-hmm. I've been talking about data for 4 years now in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Up until today, for some reason, it just flies past our ministries. Even this free knowledge that you and I are sharing, that you, me and David and Helmut here, that we share,
mm-hmm.
the knowledge just flies past them. You had even the statistician general here.
Yeah.
And for some reason, these ministries don't realize how crucial data is for us to have planning.
No, I think statistics and data, just for yes, it's Ministry Justice and Labour,
mm.
but I also have a, you know, I always like talking about BIPA,
mm.
to say beyond being a registration point, it must derive one of the best data. I know Bank of Namibia. That one, I think, is a standard of the operation of the institution. They have good research capacity.
Yeah.
They always have documents.
Yeah.
But look at other institutions to say, BIPA, for example, was supposed to tell us, to say this month the statistic is saying, these are how many businesses, for example, are operational.
Mm.
These are how many businesses are owned by young people. These are how many businesses have grown to the next level,
mm.
in what categories mm. they are into. And this is how many businesses they have expanded.
Yeah.
Because those numbers are going to define what we want to get into. Because as far as we are encouraging young entrepreneurs, economic intelligence matters. Because if an entrepreneur coming into the system, he must already have information to say, this business has failed here, this one has worked here, or this one is uncharted environment.
Mm.
But if BIPA just become a registration point, then we become having a problem because business statistics were supposed to be updated.
Yeah.
You must understand to say this is the field. There are those that are presented occasionally, but we must have a monthly statistics. Maybe they work together with NSA.
I doubt it.
Maybe to work together to say develop their capacity so that they can always give business intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a discussion that we're having with Helmut.
Mm.
Do you know that an investor that putting 800 million into your oil industry, for example, has better economic intelligence than you,
mm.
than NSA,
mm.
about your country?
Mm.
Has better economic intelligence.
And much of it is just based upon the resource, ne?
Yeah. Based upon this, because they know they are calculating to say, we are putting this, and this is how things are standing.
Mm.
We are putting this, this is how much we can make. This is how much we can lose. But because them, they invest in their research capacity. They have best lawyers, best researchers,
mm.
best statistician. That's why there was a time I was interviewing Tate Shivute, Sam Shivute.
Mm.
Then he said, oh, these guys, man, these international guys, they have best lawyers, they have best auditors, and when they come to you, you have to operate at above their level
mm.
to catch them. Even with tax invention, you are waiting for a lot of things.
Mm.
You give a statement that you are going to think about them after 5 years.
Mm.
You realize to say, no, here numbers were cooked. Or here things were not paid.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why with you, I think it's not the first time you're speaking about it. Statistics.
No, I will always hammer it.
They drive development. Data-driven development, I think, is something that should really be not only emphasized, but should really be not presented, because it's high time now that even a public leader standing up,
mm.
you must speak numbers. You must speak content.
Mm.
You can't, I and it will be shocking, ne? somebody stand up and say, vote for me, I want to become a counselor so that I can speak for you.
Mm.
Who said we don't have a mouth?
Mm.
I want to stand up so that I can build these houses. Do we even, I mean, I can build houses for you. Do we even know how many people you are talking to?
Mm.
Do you even know
or who how are you talking to?
And do you even know who you are talking to?
Yeah.
Do you know how many houses are in that constituency, are in that location? Do you know how many service providers are in that aspect? Do you know the status of the economy of that constituency? Because if you don't have those statistics, you end up bringing wrong development. You end up bringing wrong development.
Yeah.
There's been an argument in an African development that when an international, you know, this explorer came, they found women walking long distance to go fetch water.
Mm.
But they realized to say, let us build a tap nearby or a borehole. But women, they are still walking long distance to fetch water.
Mm.
And they said, no, guys, we even build a borehole. Say, no, you did not ask us. Because when we are walking that distance, that's how we socialize.
Mm.
That's how we discuss problems that we have with husbands so that we can solve them. That's how we counsel and talk to each other.
Mm.
Because you realize that you really want to help, but do you know? The question is that, do you have enough data about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because maybe they wanted a hall to discuss their issue in private, but you just go there because they are walking and they are going to fetch water. Is that an example which was given to say, is developed data driven? Is development answering to the needs? And if it's answering to the needs, are those people participants?
Yeah.
Or are they just ticking box? People, I see when you attend conferences, and maybe people should also know this, when a public attend conferences and there is an attendance register, those are part of monitoring and evaluation. Those are part of statistics.
Mm.
People just say, no, I just wrote my name. A person will just say, no, 100 people have attended. This is what we have done. We have also looked at this content.
And all 100 now come from ministries.
All 100 come from where? But it's just a number. But were people really engaging? Or you just gave them food and the cool drink, then they go home.
And you know what's the surprising thing there of the public engagements that I mentioned earlier?
Mm.
David, that space science bill that I went to, do you know that I was technically the only public member?
Mm.
All the other participants in a room the size, okay, if you take our studio and you add another, you duplicate our studio right next to it.
Mm. Yeah.
That's it. 50 to 60 people.
Yeah.
50 to 60 people about space.
Mm.
Talking about space, David, in a Windhoek, in a Comas region context.
Mm.
Then you ask yourself, does that 50 to 60 people represent 500,000 Windhoekers?
Half a million.
Half a million people. Do you know that that's not even a 1%? That's less than 1%.
It's less than 0.1.
It's less than 0.1 even. So how do we get to such a particular discussion about public engagement for the broader public to understand, okay, what are you getting up to as my government?
Hmm.
As my government, what benefit is this thing going to create for me? Now, here's the funny thing there. Yes, some of the public also included students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me correct my statement of earlier.
Yeah.
It was me and I think like two or three people that were students, actual students, but they were like advanced degree students.
Yeah.
Okay. At UNAM, science, astrology. Is it astrology or astronomy? One of the two. Science students.
Mm.
But they are doing that for
research,
as you know. And they are sitting there with a curious mindset. I'm sitting there as an observer, as an actual researcher as well.
Mm.
Observing as a media person, okay, what's going to go into this thing? What's the template? Mm. What are we building from? What are we trying to achieve? The other 90% of the audience was all completely either business people or they were government officials.
Mm.
Or they were actual academics and scholars and scientists.
Mm.
And then there were, I think, was like one or two representatives from foreign missions.
Because
there was a guy from the American embassy and there was, I suspect there was someone else there.
Mm.
Straightforward. That's it.
I think it's a good thing that you brought it up.
Mm.
I think one other thing that we also need to look at is academia.
Mm.
Because if academia can come and listen, academicians, they come to that event, they get their data, they go back to their office.
Usually they are the data, know that.
They get their office, then they write, they publish papers that are only read by academics, then they are living in their zones.
Yeah.
Then either it's an academicians within a development fraternity, there is always a gap, because most of the academicians that you see, they cannot simplify their research. They are good, they have done it, they have owned it, but few of them can simplify their research to an ordinary child. To say you studied nuclear science, or you studied geophysics, tell it to somebody who is a lay person. What is your role in the society? What do you do? And what is the benefit of that to the society? Or simplify those scientific things. It's the same with politics at an academic and also at a technical level, where you find I can just come to a meeting, I can come to a public engagement, then I put all the Oxford Dictionary
words,
Torakasha, policy, statement, and all these things, and Africa Continental Free Trade Area.
Political economy.
How can I speak about, the Vienna Convention in deep down Rundu, not to underestimate people, just really to say, but ask that person to say, put that in Rukwangari. Why? Because people just want to know why they are here, what is their role. Not for you to show them off. Well, how good you can speak your English, or how good you can speak high level thing.
Yeah.
Because as far as we want the data and statistics, as far as we want Africa Continental Free Trade Area to be implemented, the issue of relationship between academicians, politicians, policymakers, and society, if that there is still a gap there, then we are still going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Which is actually a recommendation from 5 years ago. Even until last year. That's why I told you I'm waiting for APRM, reports these days to say where is Namibia standing in terms of development. To finalize this aspect of academicians, I was speaking to Dr. Sion Ikela regarding the issue of phosphate. And he's somebody who does not, if he's angry about something, he said it. He said, no, there were scientific papers, peer-reviewed documents on the studies on the impact of this to our marine economy. There have been a lot of things. This thing is bad for our economy. He's speaking that from an academic point of view. Then I asked him a question to say, Dr. Sion, what is the contribution of academicians into policies? Are you consultant as expert in the field? Not literally you.
Yeah.
But
do you guys contribute to a decision in reality?
Because a science decision is scientific-backed decision. And a scientific-backed decision, consulting expert in the field, say, no, we are seeing a few changes, but it has not been like that. That's why you end up having decisions like this. Why? Somebody may explain the reasoning behind the stopping of this AI monitoring system from US.
Yeah.
Why was it stopped? Maybe people went back and consult AI expert to say the downside is here, the good side is here. Then the decision was reversed. Had an AI expert consulted before, then we wouldn't be in this thing.
Yeah.
To say and you can also be sued. Do you know that you can also be sued for doing such a thing? Because when you sign a contract, in the law of contract, if you have signed a contract of something, you have to abide by that contract. And breaking that contract, you have to pay for that. But it will avoid a lot of these things to say a scientific policy-backed decision must be based on data. Phosphate, I don't know how it's going to end. Maybe to reverse, maybe it's going to go. But if that impact that the scientists are already saying now happened to to be seen in the future. It's going to be stopped.
Yeah.
But it would be different if academicians, scientists, researchers, even you journalists, consulted before a decision is made. And that's also talk about the relationship. Because if we have academia on its side, policymaker on their side, then you always end up moving back and forth.
Yeah.
And the same with Africa, within the free trade area, to say, what are the trade advisors saying? Are the trade advisors saying now that Namibian banks should not be connected to Pan-Africa Payment and Settlement System or something is...
And why did they say this?
Yeah. What are the trade advisors saying about the involvement of informal economy to this trade?
Because it doesn't help, David. I'm sending products there to Ghana.
Yeah.
But I can't get the money to Namibia.
Yeah. It's true. In most cases, when we are selling products, the majority of the people who are utilizing this product, the backbone of most economies are the people at the lower class.
Yeah.
They are going to get the final product.
Yeah.
Whether it's quality or no quality, that is up for debate.
Whether it's enhanced or not enhanced.
They just buy.
Yeah.
They just buy. That's why they are also the most affected by side effects.
Yeah. Like the Iran.
Yeah, they are mostly affected by the side effects because they are not protected. If you are in the informal sector, you get sick, your business is also sick, then your client will also not survive.
Yeah.
Then you go and queue up. But yeah, it's a good discussion. I just want when we are moving in one direction, and not to underestimate everybody. A development project must be contributed by everybody.
Mm.
If we want to solve unemployment, there is nobody who is not affected by unemployment. Even the richest person in Namibia is affected by unemployment, whether he sees it or he is not seeing it.
Yeah,
that's why we are saying when somebody is working, we are in the situation where the project needs everybody to be on board.
Yeah,
the project needs everybody to be on board to say academia, all these things, and inclusive development where everybody is a participant, not only to listen to people that are so-called experts, but also to ask those questions. Yeah, that is what I can indicate.
If we also highlight, okay, we're moving away from the resource governance, but I'll be taking a quick ad break now in a short while. The next particular talking point has always been Dr. Millet, the Polish-German guy, and even Mr. Zaire highlighted, Denis Zaire, about the dominance of large companies. But before then, we'll quickly be taking a short break, dear listeners, and we'll come back right after this. Vilvitje University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vilvitje University, where everyone is an achiever. And we've just headed into the last third specifically. This means that we are at the top of the hour at 6 p.m. Dear listeners, you're listening to The Home Run here on your number one talk radio station. It is Monday. You've known that for the better part of this day. The same for me as well. I actually enjoy Mondays because we get to start from a new dimension, new perspective, and also getting into new conversations. So far, it's just David and myself here in studio in terms of being one third of the hard disk drive trio, as Helmut likes making jokes of, because the H is not here, that being Helmut. It's just... Now I'm going to be stuck making this joke. I'm sorry, David.
Yeah.
It's just the double D effect or the D2 effect. Let's just leave it there. Whichever pun you see first. I'm sorry. You saw it. I didn't want to show you, but yeah. Getting back into where we left off just before the short break, large companies that can dominate, David, this has always been my particular worry. Even though the academics at the book's launch, that being Zaire, Milei, and even Warikandwa, all three of them cited the dominance of large companies on the continent. You know, you established big corporations in every country.
Yeah.
It will spell to something good because they will have the money, right, to get into a new economy. They will have the money to influence or to be able to borrow money,
yeah,
basically to say, hey, listen, we're going to appoint new truck drivers to drive my product from Namibia, let's say, to Gabon. I like picking Gabon.
They can also pay you to solve a problem that require a longer legal process.
That too, in another country.
Yeah, no, they can pay you. Those guys don't have time.
Yeah, because they can they want to get quickly to the conversation.
Yeah.
So this definitely will be a platform, the AfCFTA, where we will see the big guys firstly being the first ones exploring Africa. I mean, I saw it already, David, just to mention. In a that was the 2008 or 2006 attack that happened in Nairobi, the mall attack by Al-Shabaab.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
I think I remember.
Do you know what was the first thing that I saw on BBC Africa?
Yeah.
In Windhoek.
Yeah.
From Nairobi.
Yeah.
I saw South African businesses.
Yeah.
At that mall.
Yeah.
South African businesses. And they were already there pre-2010.
I'm telling you.
And you can already see who's got the clout, who's got the ability to move. They're not waiting for their government, South Africa, to say, yes, you know what, South African company, you may now come into Namibia. No. They would have already sent like a scout, one guy on a plane or two guys.
Yeah.
And go say, what does it look like there? We are hearing positive things at the AU level.
Mm.
And then those two guys come back after staying in that country for a month. They come back to South Africa, and they come and show David, who's now the CEO of the company, because now David has a plan for West of Africa.
Yeah.
Because that's what the South Africans label Africa and themselves. They go like, you've got South Africa,
yeah,
and the rest of Africa.
Yeah, the rest of Africa. And we have a plan to solve that problem.
Yeah.
And one of the things that also blinded us is that is creation of opportunities.
Yeah.
When you speak about, let me not divert from the conversation, especially when you speak about international businesses, there is always a fear, especially with the law, punishing an ordinary Namibian business who did not comply, then punishing an international company that was caught with a container full of money. You really see that, I think it's also the question that we should also ask our judicial system to say, why we have so hard on fellow Namibians, but the rules apply differently when you are dealing with foreign businesses. You know, people that violate most of the laws, especially serious crimes such as poachings, these are not Namibians. Namibians are just agents,
which are also the criminals.
Yeah, they are mini criminals.
Mm.
The people.
Okay, not all Namibians. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. Not all Namibians.
Yeah,
but yes.
But when you look at the law, look at I like giving and I like debating with my friends, especially when you speak about the issue of fish rot.
Yeah.
There was a time we were discussing. I said, no, Namibians are not corrupt. And even when you look at fish rot, they say, no, fish rot, Namibians are corrupt. I said, no, they were corrupted. If we take a calculator, who benefited more from fish rot?
It was Iceland.
It's not Namibia.
Yeah, it was not Namibia.
It's not Namibia. And this thing, they always make, this is a guy, James the Mastermind.
Mm.
You can't be a mastermind in the plan that you did not create.
Mm.
He is like a mini mastermind within a Namibian plan. Within a Namibian plan. It's true. It's true. Yeah.
I hope Helmut is not listening because he'll come back with notes about that.
Yeah. No, it's a mini mastermind within a Namibian plan.
Yeah.
But there is a bigger plan at a bigger level.
Yeah.
And when you look at that, you really start to see, you really want to tell me that, these companies did not know what was happening in Namibia.
No, they didn't.
All those years.
They didn't know.
You really want to tell me that that even their government did not know the amount of money that that this
they did know. They did know because they did declare that their boats were that they came to Namibia.
Then they just fired two people just to show that no, we can see you. But those guys are still free there.
Mm.
And it's also telling you to say that you are still at a vulnerable position, even if Africa will enter free trade go smoothly.
Mm.
Because if you are treating a smaller businesses so harsh,
mm.
and you are not treating those who are taking more, somebody who has just got created a syndicate of scamming people.
Mm.
Then next thing you hear, people are in their country. You don't know which route they took
mm.
after they got the bay, which route they took. But you heard that, don't know, they are in their country. And you really ask yourself a question to say, if we are very serious, our laws must also apply.
Yeah.
The same. Whether you have a best lawyer or don't have a best lawyer, when you did something, the justice system will always determine.
Mm.
You may be win on technicality, but punishment will always be there. Because it doesn't...
Or at least prove to the Namibian public this person was taken to court at least.
Yeah.
And that they were processed somehow, whether they won the case or not, they were there.
You don't need to be just there for a face. The law must just take its course to say, why have you done something that you know is violating your... the country's law?
Yeah.
Especially poaching, that if you are in the business of poaching, if you are in... full-time business of scamming,
mm.
then it must be dealt with.
Mm.
Yeah.
No, we've properly dealt, for example, with the pig butchering that was discovered here in Namibia back in 2024. A dimension that also exists, guys. Quickly as David quickly exits here from us. A dimension that also exists has been the aspect in terms of how we've already been dealing in many scenarios with double taxation destinations, with the beneficial ownership structures of multiple companies. I mean, every time when I go to a scenario which has to speak to governance that comes through from the civil society guys like IPPR and the other civil society people, and the moment they start talking about beneficial ownership, because you sometimes see how a conversation gets in the broader governance discussion ends up in a beneficial ownership discussion, and then they would cite, for example, that you know, how difficult it is to try and understand who actually owns certain particular organizations in Namibia, because apparently, according to the civil society people, BIPA just doesn't want to respond anymore to those particular queries. And this is actually a bit weird, because people should not be doing that, because technically speaking, the Access to Information Act is operational. Its full operationality is based upon the appointment of a commissioner, but technically the act is operational. We also have to try and understand, primarily in terms of how, for the greater good of this economy, because you can have a whole bunch of businesses that just employ one people, and then you can call it an economy as well. For the greater good of achieving the particular developmental goals that Namibia has set out. I mean, Warikandwa cited a whole bunch of nice things. I just want to read from some of those chapter headlines, because he obviously ended at chapter 8, but I'm gonna scroll through once again some of those chapter titles and just share with the listeners a little bit. So the first chapter obviously starts off with laying the groundwork, which was constitutionalism and sustainable economic development in Africa.
Yeah.
Warikandwa himself and Karisep, and there was another guy that I did not see, Kamga, and Zaire, they are the guys that basically start off in chapter 1. But then when you get to chapter 2, financial stability as a requisite. David, this has been actually Africa's biggest problem, because where did we go for sustainable development financing?
Hmm?
Where did we go for sustainable development financing? The whole continent?
Outside.
Yeah. And when the moment we go outside, we are being told, yeah, but we actually want you to build this so that it leads to that mine, or we want you to build this so that you ship out this resource to our economy, or you build this so that it connects to that piece. But if you go to the UK right now, ne, you will not, you will potentially not find one railway line running from a mine.
You know what I tell people is to say, as far as I respect environmental partner, there are things that I disagree with, and I disagree with not it's not personal.
Yeah.
It's just a reasoning to say. Yeah. To me, Robito Corridor, you have to prove me. For example, Robito Corridor, not only corridors.
David, I know that that thing will only serve the mine. The mine that's at the start in Zambia.
Mm.
There's a copper mine there.
Yeah.
It will serve that mine's purpose.
Yeah. It's that aspect to say, look at who is transported there.
Yeah.
There have been debate of developmental practitioners, especially during colonialism, when they debated to say colonialism was actually developing people, they build roads and all these things, but they realized to say, but this was it not making it easier to go to war for transportation of people?
because basically that's what happened.
How many people owned vehicles that time?
Yeah.
People owned cars? Was it really a thing, or is just a coincidence to say we are also bringing to you? When people bring water, where did they go to first? Was it really coming to you, or to serve the greater purpose?
Mm.
That is looking at that. But other than that, it's always good to go beyond the obvious and also to prove. That's why my biggest question is, what did we do when we are advised?
Mm.
Because what you do when you are advised is necessary, because there is a difference between an advice and an order, and also a directive. Because if it's a developmental partner, I want Namibian brave engineers who stand up and who can say, no, we have a project with somebody, let me say from German,
yeah,
a German engineer and a Namibian engineer just from NAST. To say, no, this is not how things are being done.
Yeah.
I know you are coming here to consult and advise, but this is what I'm going to disagree with you. Then I want them to be on one table. Then the government can also enter that phrase to say, no, I think in terms of reasoning, this guy is correct.
Mm.
But that argument is already lost on its start when you are looking at it. To say, no, this guy was appointed by an environmental partner. Or this guy is coming from Japan, is coming from China.
Mm.
You want to tell me that an engineer from Japan cannot be wrong? Can be wrong, can be misguided.
Mm.
And that is exactly what we want to get into, say, when we are advised, did we take it as a directive, or we have taken the advice, then we also add our own thing.
Yeah.
Look at Namibia road structure. Ask yourself a question to say, how many Namibian engineers contributed to that design? If they were working now with experts who have international exposure, what did they contribute?
Mm.
Did they just accept everything, or they also advise? Because that will also tell you to say, do you have ownership of your direction? You know, when you go, is it at the Vetsan? There are schools of urban and developmental studies where a lot of developmental practitioners from developed nations, they come and advise, but up to now they never solve the issue of shanty towns in South Africa, everywhere you go in Africa. But all these governments
and
to their Ministry of Development, some are called development planning,
yeah,
urban and rural development, economic planning. They are still, they go to Nigeria, go to Ghana, go to where they did not solve that problem.
Kenya that has Africa's largest informal settlement.
Yeah.
The one in Nairobi.
But go to those institutions, they always have an advice. I know we have a developmental planner, they bring money and advice. But why are we not solving those problems?
Yeah. It's a primary concern,
yeah,
David, because here's the thing, which I see in the rest of Africa, but also in Namibia.
Yeah.
We want to modernize, but as we are modernizing,
mm,
and I suspect this is the issue with many of the African countries,
mm,
we are centralized. We are not decentralizing, let's for example say, that province, what was that thing? Who was the guy that gave the example of the constituencies? Was it you?
Mm.
The 47 constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry, it wasn't you. It was the webinar I was busy recording on just before we.
Constituency in terms of?
No, they've got counties, not constituencies.
Is it province? Kenya?
Yeah, for Kenya. Kenya has 47 counties.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine them as like small regions.
Yeah,
small regions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a discussion about, you know, how to make, agro-food industry actually work to the benefit of all Kenyans.
Yeah.
And in that example that guy gave, he said, the central government of Kenya basically explained to these local authorities and these county governments,
mm-hmm.
you guys start your own agricultural programs that helps with food security. Now, what I'm explaining is that thing that you mentioned, mm-hmm. simplify a direction or simplify a piece of information, you know, for the everyday person.
Yeah, yeah.
That in itself was the decentralization exercise taking place, because the central government went and said, listen, we will give the budget. You guys just secure in your respective local authorities, and county authorities, the aspect of food security and the projects that need to play a role in that food security discussion.
Mm.
Kudos. Good start. You come to Namibia.
Mm.
I drive to a town and the town looks the same for the past 36 years.
Yeah.
I drive to another town outside Windhoek. That town looks the same for the past 36 years.
Mm.
I go to another town, which I don't know if it's a town or just an installation of buildings.
Mm.
But on paper, it says it's a town.
Yeah.
And we try to understand what's the actual plan that we want to achieve here.
Yeah.
And the worst case scenario is, Windhoek is still just attracting the rural to urban migration trend. It will Windhoek and the coast. Mm. It will continue attracting it.
Yeah,
Windhoek won't run away from it, David. There's unfortunately nothing Windhoek can do, because primarily, I think that the city planners are probably not telling the councillors the full scope of the reality by saying, "Listen, guys, we are too attractive." Since we are subsidizing some of these other local authorities, you guys have to go tell those other local authorities.
Yeah.
Your people must stop coming here. Your constituents must stop moving to my constituency.
You know, the problem with a local authority development is also the guy that you put in charge of making policies.
Yeah.
Within that local authority, because. You need the sharp and capacitated councillors that are political leaders within that local authorities that can make policies and respond on time. If you have, in terms of our political nature, I think it's also something that we need to change.
Yeah.
When you have somebody who is already struggling at understanding the field, and you give a person a policy document, you give a person a budget to interpret, or give a person a lot of documents, this person will just be sleeping, not really to say bad about people, but you say a person can just sleep and wait for lunchtime.
Yeah.
That is also says a lot, because everything starts and ends with leadership, and also duplication of duties. You will find out that councillors that are being advised by CEOs, and which is actually wrong. There is a difference between an administrator and somebody who is at the policy level, regardless of that's why you see CEO become so powerful and they start doing what they want to do. But it's a good thing that you brought it up to say, why are people moving?
Mm.
Why are people moving? People are moving because they are not seeing what they are supposed to see. People are moving because sometimes it's just services. Sometimes it's perceived opportunities that enter into shattered dreams. And people travel long distances. They sell their cattle.
Mm.
I was telling, I think just 2 weeks ago, to say, coming to Windhoek was one of my greatest achievements because of what I've had. But looking at the picture being painted, and where we are, you can also see, regardless of whatever you see, you realize to say there's still challenges. There's still challenges that are happening within within the city.
Yeah.
That's why this, the broader concept of continental free trade area has to start at home.
Yeah.
To say, is your house ready to trade with another house in another town, in another country?
Mm.
Are your people capable of engaging into continental trade? How many of Namibian businesses started by Namibians are engaging in regional trade?
Yeah.
Apart from now, state trading at this aspect of minerals and all these things, how many real business? I'm not talking about consulting. I'm not talking about ordering.
Mm.
I'm talking about fixing. I'm talking about real products to say, this is what we have made, what we produce, and what we are giving. And it has to be expanded. It has really to be expanded, but we also need to start with at home. Because do we have a picture? Because, Dwight, if I have to ask you, for Namibia to be fully integrated into continental free trade area, do we have a picture in our mind to say, this is the standard of living we want to be before we open our border? This is the level of...
And many of the countries didn't even accept that protocol.
Yeah.
The one about free movement of people.
It's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is the standard that we must have. This is the... Maybe our economy need to grow at let's say, at 5%. Or we can't just enter when we are hitting below the target.
Mm.
And I like saying this, maybe we are also going to get a new perspective, which is not the fault of those who are presenting data, because people must always get it correctly to say, when I'm saying for the past 3 years, we have been hitting below the targets in terms of economic development. And it's our responsibility as all Namibians to say, what have we done wrong?
Yeah.
But do we have an ideal Namibia as a country? The level of employment, the economic standard, the level of governance before we enter into that, or we are going to enter here at this level.
Mm. I would have advised on that suggestion that we pursue Namibia's development agenda first, build Namibia up to the most optimum level, meaning every town is properly planned, resources were invested from central government in each particular town and region of Namibia. And then we go like, if AFCFTA, we said yes in 2018, 15 years that way.
We are ready.
We can participate. You can bring your tourists to Africa, Africa to Namibia. Mm. And then you can absorb it. But here's the funny thing. Earlier today, David, and remember after I wrote the article that's also in today's e-paper, the one about the tourism statistics.
Mm.
Who dominates Namibia's tourism market? So already the implementers of Namibia's economy, the private sector, knows who it wants. They know, yes, there are, let me say, tourists, let's say in Ghana or in Nigeria that can come here. But the implementer on the ground wants a specific tourist, a specific customer.
Is German number one?
It's once again Germany, Austria, and Swiss. They're put together, the three countries.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's followed by the next three countries together, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg.
And the tourism statistic report, I think it has to be expanded also, because as far as it speak about categories of tourists, we must also have a very clear picture. Which people are we attracting?
And who are we marketing to?
Who are we marketing to? Because if you speak about business tourism, that one you must know to say, which people are we attracting? And we must go into details. We cannot just go into detail to say, no, it's 1.2 million. For example, these are the numbers from this country and all this country. But if those statistics are well explained, we expect that when it takes time to be released, it must come explained to say, these are the numbers of people that we are attracting. However, we are attracting this specific kind of people within this age. And if it's business tourism, this is the area they want to get into.
Yeah.
And that is how we can make decisions. But if we are not we are not at that level, I think it's also going to be very problematic, because one of the things that we need to ask is that what is the use of statistics?
Mm.
And it's a very important question that we should ask ourselves, especially looking at the media, to say when we report about the recent released report by ECB, for example.
Oh, the one of yesterday, of today.
No, yeah, the one of today that is looking at
infrastructure.
Infrastructure,
I think.
To say, is it when it comes to electricity, they are not well in order. When it comes to some central region, is doing a bit better and all these things. Mm. Do we only need this so that we can say, no, this guy is not performing? Do I need statistics that Windhoek is not developing so that I can play my chai, for example?
Mm.
Or do I need statistics so that I can inform my decision?
Mm.
Because it's one thing to present, it's one thing to say, how are you going to do it?
Mm.
When there's a difference between 2024 and the 2025 tourism statistics, there might be...
Which one was the one that you brought the report back?
Come again?
Which report was it?
It's 2025. It's 2024. The one for 2026 is not yet out.
Which is the 2025 one?
2024 has released in 2025. The one that we have now is for 2025.
Which was the one that you brought?
That's 2024.
2024?
Yeah.
That was released in 2025?
Yeah, 2025. 2024 was released last year.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. The one for last year was released late this year.
Wasn't it the one that you brought now recently?
No, it's 2024.
The 2024 one?
Yeah, it's 2024. Yeah, no, this one, I think this one is also on online. No, this one I did not attend.
Yeah.
The one was released this year. What I want to ask is that when you compare 2024, 2025, there's a decline in terms of tourism coming to Namibia.
Mm.
One thing that we should look at is that what can we do?
Mm.
Are we attracting more, or we need to entice them more?
Mm.
Why Namibia having a good wildlife, best beautiful desert and all these things, but people are not coming as they were supposed to come?
Mm.
What have we done wrong? What other countries? Why a lot of tourists are still going to the northern part of Africa? What is there?
Yeah.
Apart from pyramids now in
Egypt.
In Egypt and other part of Morocco.
I have to admit, David, Algeria is pretty pretty. It's very pretty.
Yeah.
Algeria is very pretty.
No, the beauty is in the eyes of the...
of the beholder?
Of the beholder.
The beholder is...
No, the beauty is in the eyes of the beholders. But it's what you do with the beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the beauty must be marketed also.
Mm.
Because if it's a most beautiful lady, and they are arguing with water,
mm,
the beauty can still be there, but you need to make sure that you also upgrade your game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because those are the critical questions that we need to ask, to say, we should not let nature take its course.
Mm.
We should not let international changes to define us. We must really be using those statistics to make decisions, because I'm scared of.
Yeah.
I'm scared of us finding ourselves having the same problem, where we spoke about the solution many years ago.
Yeah.
No, that is what I'm scared of, because...
Oh, we already knew about the problem back then.
We knew about the problem, but we are still standing to say, because reasoning will not be always there.
Yeah.
Because that is what I'm scared of, because that is a very dangerous zone, because there's always somebody going to be blamed.
Yeah.
There's always somebody going to be blamed. If we find ourselves at 40 years or at 50 years, having almost the same problem that we had 20 years ago, discussing, writing, engaging about the solution, but did one or nothing about how to move from where we are. I think that is the most dangerous part, because it's going to be a blame game, it's going to be a pointing finger, and it's also going to be disencouraging. Especially when you want to change things,
it's a scenario, David.
Yeah.
You are right.
Yeah.
Because looking at, obviously, at the rate of trying to correct something. Mm-hmm. We obviously sit as Namibians, and we wonder, okay, when is development gonna strike my town or my region, and how am I gonna see the actual beneficiation come through? But if we really ask a question in terms of what would we need, that point, the one that we left off on, financial stability for your economic development depends on financing. And we knew, because we could answer it without even opening out our eyes, we didn't even have to think far, that much of our development financing comes from outside of Africa. Okay, kudos to Namibia, who is obviously trying its best to self-finance, but obviously this conflict in the Middle East has not brought us any particular positives, because we are ultimately just experiencing the worst in terms of where the money is going, which is one of the things that you didn't like from the Bank of Namibia people, David, about, yeah, it's nice. I know about the externals. I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. But is there something we can improve that could make our money stronger?
Yeah. I also have to say, no, why guys,
and I mean, David,
why are you busy making money when we don't have money? Which money are you using to make money? And these are very critical questions. Economic researcher should ask to say, if I have to ask you the feature of Namibian dollars, how many are they? I did not even know that. I think I was behind in the informal market. You know the 30 Namibian dollars?
Yeah.
If it's a bit torn, people will not accept it.
The waterproof
yeah,
note.
People will not accept it. I did not know.
Serious?
I was buying, if it's a bit torn,
yeah,
you have to bring it to the bank. People will not accept that thing.
Yeah.
But what I want to indicate is that how much money are you spending in making money in a situation that we do not have money? And is that really a priority? Is changing features on the money really brought any changes to the Namibian economic progress?
Yeah.
Could we have waited? Did it reduce really, fraud? What can we do better next time? Because those are economic questions, because it's not a question of blaming.
Yeah.
Maybe just to convince people to say, I want to honor Dwight, I want to make 20 Namibian dollars, then I honor you. But we have to print that in a large amount. But it has features of heroism and all these things. But the question is that at this point in time, what can we prioritize? Is it really a priority? And if we can just discuss it openly, one economist can come and challenge me to say, is it really a priority?
No, it's not. It wasn't a priority back then.
It's a priority really to change our money now.
To have a commemorative note that's in limited supply, which you can't even put in it when you go and pay for your car, your car's parking ticket. The machine doesn't recognize that note.
ATMs have to be changed here and every day.
Exactly.
Every time we have to change ATMs, we have to change all these things.
Yeah.
But it requires us to go deep into what we have said to say. It's going to be very difficult when we are at the same problem 5 years from now. Then we discuss about question we ask ourselves already before.
Yeah.
And I really wish when we are going to do review in terms of our developmental plans, the strategic plans of institutions must also be reviewed publicly.
Yeah.
To say, when we say this is what we're going to do, who did not do right the right thing?
Yeah.
I'm the first person to be very happy if somebody pointed out things that I did not do.
Yeah.
Because if you learn it that way, it's going to be easier. Because we can't just, in 2030, you are going to be invited to 20 launch of strategic plans. I just know, bring that document. You know what I'm going to say? You know what I'm going to say? Because I know, bring that document that you brought 5 years ago. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. it's like, it's a norm. People don't even see the
importance.
We are going to swag off mode. We are going to draft a strategic plan.
Do you know what's the worst part? Maybe we might have AI running our elections by then. We might have AI running our elections by then. So
No. It's not. I don't think we're going to be at that level yet. No, the thing that we need to do is bring that document that you put just down now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it to say, when you say you are going here, where
did
you
we
go?
Achieve anything from this document?
Yeah, did you achieve anything from this document?
No, it's actually a good point because here's the funny thing about policies that I realized now.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting read from one of, what's the shadow minister of IPC? Rodney Kluter. Mm. He wrote recently about, I don't know, I can't remember the platform, but it's a website that he cited himself about the difference between an MOU, which we've also been saying on Eagle FM. An MOU is not an agreement. An MOU just says my government and that government, we understand each other. We understand each other.
We are on the same page.
We're on the same page.
Yeah, but we are on the same page.
And the concern from that has been, Namibia is very cautious to start with MOUs now. The only development partner, David, that I've seen in the past 6 years actually pushed Namibia to migrate from not just having an MOU, but the MOU leads to an agreement. This agreement leads to another agreement.
Yeah.
Has been the EU. Only the EU has done this with us. But here's the thing.
No, yeah, they respect contracts in the they respect contract in the international trade and
but they have a culture of saying we must deliver.
Let's progress.
We can't just have an MOU knowing each other through telephone calls.
Colleagues, we understand each other.
We're having telephone calls with each other to say, hi David, how are you doing?
Yeah.
No, I'm fine. So how are you doing? I just said I'm fine.
All right.
Okay. So how are you really?
Do you understand me? Yes, I understand you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
But no, the conversation. Now, I think that's also what we've got to incorporate. The mindset of when we engage internationally. And that's why I started with that philosophic point at the start. Do you remember with?
But you know, Dwight, where I bit diverted, eh?
Yeah.
Is the usefulness. Is the practicality of it.
Of these agreements.
Because somebody who signed an MOU and somebody who signed a trade agreement, the signature, let's move beyond signature and the practical part is what is necessary.
Yeah.
To say, do you know how many trade agreements are we into?
Okay. Must I show you the ugly reality I saw at State House?
Yeah.
When what's the previous Chancellor of Germany? Olaf Scholz.
Yeah.
He's number two. The guy who has the two portfolios, he was the deputy chancellor and he was the minister for this ministry under which this green hydrogen thing also, is being developed by Germany.
Mm-hmm.
When Robert Habeck came here, he's that deputy chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
When he came here, David, we moved from, where he was busy engaging and signing with President Kainkop, the signing ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved from there and we had to move to the banquet hall in State House.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see, the doors were closed when we, the media, went up because we had to follow Habeck up to where President Kainkop was. When we came down, that banquet hall, David, was full of just German business representatives.
Yeah.
He flew here with the whole German energy sector.
Yeah.
How many executives did President Nandin Daitwa take to China?
I think it was massive. It was not 200.
Was it 200? She did the exact same thing, I think, that she that Namibia saw from what Habeck did. Habeck showed up here, David. David, I'll be honest with you. The only Namibian business person there is a Namibian guy that lives in Johannesburg. His company is registered in South Africa. And his company did reverse investment into Namibia.
No, that is not Namibia.
No, the guy said he's Namibian. Said he had to open up the company there and he had to reverse invest in Namibia.
It's not Namibian, that one. That one is my friend Reef and Hang is even a better Namibian who create employment. It's true.
Yeah.
I think it's an aspect of how it's working.
Yeah.
But you mentioned a very important point about that delegation. I have seen, our president's visit to China.
Mm.
that really bear fruit. I interviewed two people now that said that progress was made because of that delegation. I think the diplomatic engagement changed the economic diplomacy.
Yeah, because if you're going to have diplomacy, right, it has to culminate or result in trade.
But you know what is what need to be done? We need to at least to track that progress.
Yeah.
You know, Velvicia University, at one point I interviewed the head of TVET.
Yeah.
Then he said, you know, this scholarship that we have created in terms of we are training in vocational training center, but in the new industry, EVs, children, the young ones are going there to be trained. They say, you know what, this was a product of the president's visit to China. To me, I said, that is what I want. I don't want we understand each other. We understood everything. We have been shaking a lot of hands, but I want a lot of hands that are productive. That is exactly what I want. I also interviewed one guy with LNJ Statler Consultants. Then he said, no, the partnership that we have got into, these are things that you can see. It was a product of that engagement. Maybe more to come to see, really to say, economic diplomacy of us understanding each other and being productive can get something. Yeah.
Just along there, David.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
So we come back from the quick break right there, dear listeners. You're still on the home run here with your Drive Time crew, specifically as you've been on our company from 4 up until 7. We're about 15 minutes away from 7. We were still on the talking point where David was highlighting the understand each other culture and diplomacy. David, we've got a quick caller's intervention coming through. Let's get that caller's contribution. Okay. Eagle FM, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, my people. How are you?
Good on you, Angabona.
How are you doing, people?
Angabona, we said we are cool. Or are you waiting for David to respond?
No, not necessarily, because you are the only one who responds.
Okay, Angabona.
So, is David Joseph there?
Yes, sir. How are you?
David.
Yes, sir.
How are you? We did not speak about you and congratulate you for the appointment of Professor Gideon.
Who are you congratulating?
Remember, we were talking about it and we hammered it and we really, you know, what has happened, you know? We didn't say any other thing, we just kept quiet.
Come again, I'm not getting you.
You remember when Professor Gideon, during their interview with the other professor, who is that the other lady? So we thank God, God has intervened. Unlike the last time, when they were doing their clandestine activities,
I think it's just the timing, and also, you know, I think, you know, the best, they are saying the best lesson in life is failing. I think he's well positioned now. If he got it earlier, it would be maybe difficult, but I think failure is a best lesson, and I think it's just timing.
Oh, good timing, eh? Not our own timing.
Yeah.
Not our own. Agbona. Agbona, what do you want to add?
I'm just saying that you guys, it's good when we do things in accordance with the scripture.
What scripture, Agbona? What scripture?
So are you people seeing... So David is the one who introduced me to Madlanga Commission of Inquiry. It's getting hot now.
Yeah, we saw.
You saw it, ne?
Yep.
The one of today,
Kat Matlala, yeah.
So, and I don't know whether the lawyers have withdrawn, or the lawyers and the legal representatives have withdrawn, and I have been listening and following, and I did not finish what has happened at the last, whether they have now withdrawn, or maybe Kenny David and you yourself who can tell me more.
Angabona, that particular session today was based upon they were going over certain particular claims in his previous testimony. I think that's from here, from lunch, after I finished with the On the Radar. So it was based upon his previous testimony that he gave at the start, and they were gonna go over some of those things that he said there. So it was almost like a review of his previous testimony.
Yeah, without a legal representative.
Well, it's just a commission, Angabona. He can't be charged yet.
Yeah, because I remember today, like you were saying, from the afternoon there, I didn't follow very much. But they were saying that, yes, whether they withdraw, and the ruling, I think, was given by the commissioner, that, yes, whether you withdraw or not, that is the part that I did not get very well. So I thought maybe you can update me on that. And if that is the case, maybe we wait until tomorrow and see what unfolds from tomorrow.
Maybe, Angabona. But then we won't be talking about Kat Matlala and the Matlanga Commission, Angabona.
We will not talk about it. No, it's also good to talk about it because I'm not preempting the thing. But it's possible that these things are also playing, in our own situation. I just hope that that's not the case.
Oh, what's the truth? Okay, Uncle Bona, let's not deviate.
Let me listen before you end your story.
Okay, Uncle Bona, thanks for coming through.
God bless you. Yeah.
All right, David, besides the Matlanga Commission and Kat Matlala's sort of like second take on testimony, you were obviously pointing out towards the aspect that how are you doing culture in terms of diplomacy?
Yeah.
It's basically not something that we need.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we should have actually done away with. I mean, even back in President Geingob's first term, back in 2014. Not to say that the previous presidencies before him probably did not have such or had a lack of purposeful engagement with international partners. But
I think it's fair to say that the Pamba was more on peace and stability. He was not a diplomat.
He was technically also more on let's fix internally our issues. Yeah. Remember, because the mass housing program is.
But he had. I think he trusted a lot of Namibians with resources, and we did not get that.
Yeah.
No, he trusted a lot of Namibians, and a lot of Namibians saw that as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because with him, I think he wanted to open up the economy. Black economic empowerment was working during his time, but it really did not work out at the end of it.
Yeah.
But the thing about economic diplomacy, it must be strategic because we cannot, a delegation of 200 business people, either they pay themselves or not, that is a lot of money.
Mm.
The question is, what is the impact of it?
Mm.
We know some agreement will not work out, yes, and all these things, but the impact always matters. That is why we cannot afford anymore to speculate, to be hopeful. We must do our research. When you go to Ghana, we have a clear plan to say Ghana is stopping in terms of gold.
Mm.
We have gold. What do they do with their gold?
Mm.
What can we learn from it? When you go to Nigeria, we already know to say here is oil.
Mm.
This is the business we are going to get into. When you go to Angola, it's the same thing. Not to say we understand each other.
Mm.
How come somebody asked a question to say, how come you guys would depend on Angola? The whole war, 30 years in the bush.
Mm.
Angola is helping you. But after that independence, we are just selling, maize.
Mm.
Think the US dollar that time came to Angola, they came to pay back when they were doing very well.
Yeah.
Those time. But what is wrong with it?
Mm.
Is it the language?
The funny thing is Angola is the most disconnected economy in SADC.
Yeah, but
disconnected from the rest of SADC.
But we were supposed to take that as an opportunity.
We were supposed to also help them. Now, do you know what the South Africans have done?
Yeah.
They're using Namibia as a transit territory.
Yeah, no,
they are in Angola.
No, they're already in.
Yeah, they're already in Angola.
They're already in. Look at what Zambia did. Zambia saw what we did. We did not see for 30 years.
So we lost out in terms of, like, let's say, Namibians establishing, let's just say, retail businesses. Now,
Angola was supposed to be what Namibia is to South Africa in terms of relationship.
Yeah.
Because of common history. We share culture, we share people. Angola has resources. We're supposed to have stronger partnership in terms of universities.
Now, I've got two Angolan friends, who are consulting for oil rig companies all across the world.
Yeah.
Where are Namibians?
I'm telling you. No, we understand
each other. And now they are back in Namibia, training Namibians at Valve.
No, we understand each other. We are just at an understanding of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think economic diplomacy is really taking out the former traditional diplomacy of security and politics.
Yeah.
And to say, no, we are together. You know, if we are, I feel pain when you are in pain, to say, no, I'm in solidarity with you. As long as solidarity is showing the position, result always matters.
Mm.
I'm actually very happy to, especially with politicians that are saying the donation to Cuba is not enough.
Mm.
That is really not enough because Cuba has done a lot of things to us, but we can't pay them not even 1 million.
But we're afraid of America.
Yeah.
David, that's the concern.
No, it's not a matter of afraid. It's not a matter of being afraid. It's a matter of standing up because our foreign policy is very clear.
Mm.
We treat America as we treat any other person, to say we are a friend to everybody.
Yeah.
And enemy to none.
Yeah.
I like seeing when there's a host of diplomatic engagement, Ukraine representative, Russian representative, American representative, ambassador, and Russian ambassador, Iranian ambassador. We accommodate all of them in the same, just to show them, to say, this is our level of engagement.
Mm.
And with Cuba, we can't pay them with that. And I think those who have, and even the government maybe must do something to say, that's the guy who stood for you, who lost people, lost...
here in Angola,
lost
defending you.
Lost friends.
Yeah.
Accommodate you, gave you scholarships, and train your doctors, and you are paying him like that. I think that is where you say, let's not say we understand you are in pain, we are in solidarity.
Mm.
If I don't know about Venezuela was just in terms of maybe ideology, but not really in terms of practical terms,
involvement,
practical terms. But if Cuba was there, even came supported the guy.
Yeah.
Even in pain, whatever they have difference with other people, they're still each other there.
David, you know what will happen to Namibia's banking system?
Mm.
The Americans will make a phone call to South Africa saying, I see Namibia is sending money to the Cuban embassy, because the American ambassador would here go and make a phone call to them. Then we will become the new Iran.
I don't think our donation will come to that extent. Just an appreciation. The money that is contributed.
Do you know that this embassy, the Cuban embassy, doesn't have bank accounts?
Mm.
It was closed down because of Trump, back in Trump's first term.
Mm. You know, the money that is given to Cuba is not even a money that we donate at gala dinners.
Yeah.
The money that we donated.
They need bank accounts, David. Not.
Are we taking the bag? Are we taking in cash or what?
No, they don't have bank accounts. He told.
How do they deal with their finance? What are they linked to? Are they linked to?
They don't have bank accounts.
What are they linked to when they do international transactions?
Well, the ambassador gave their discussion, but because America intimidates everybody.
Oh, we should do it the mod.
Well, I think that could probably work. I think it could probably work. But the downside has been, you are right.
Yeah.
For example, you know, if we really care about friends.
No, that's not solidarity. Honestly, ne, solidarity, to say I understand you, that's why.
And apparently, if a Namibian ship tries to sail, let's play not devil's advocate, because that position actually did exist in the Catholic Church. It really did. I was also shocked.
What is it?
The devil's advocate.
Mm.
If someone, you know, back in the, when was it? The position ended in the 1800s or in the, if someone came and said, yeah, I was bewitched by the devil, then the Catholic Church would literally go get the special priest who's a lawyer that defends the devil in a court case.
Oh.
And then it's technically to show the person who says that they committed a crime, because they were possessed.
Mm.
It's actually a way of the church to technically prove this person, that this person was just a pure, you know, evil person that premeditated the crime,
mm-hmm.
without showing that, by technically showing the lack of possession.
I did not know.
I also discovered that at the start of this year, David, I thought it was just a thing that it was a phrase that was said in English. But anyway, so let's play devil's advocate. Let's, for example, say Namibia takes its diplomacy to another level and it decides to send a cargo ship to Havana, Cuba.
Mm.
Just that cargo ship getting there will be blocked. Because we can do that if we can expand trade, ne, and help literally a country that helped us achieve its goals. The downside is we can, but here's the downside. Currently, the kind of American president that America has is a guy who doesn't care if he attacks your country or not.
No,
even his own generals have to stop him. His own, what's that? Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Mm.
The higher level generals. Even his own generals.
But do you know that somebody said in the mind of Ayatollah, in the mind of Trump, for example, there's nothing like Namibia.
No, there's nothing like Namibia.
Maybe South Africa is there.
Yeah.
Just to look at priorities, not really to underestimate ourselves, né? In terms of priorities.
Yeah.
To say there are more bigger things.
Yeah. And
there are more strategic things.
And it's bigger than Namibia.
Yeah, and it's bigger than us, because how we look at us, because it's us.
Yeah.
But at that
level, we think our world is important.
Yeah, but at that level, somebody said, no, there's nothing like Namibia in the maybe SADC. Maybe SADC is there, but South Africa is really there.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe SADC is there because even if Cuba was a big country, Cuba is still a big country.
It still is.
Cuba is influential. Then us giving even 20 million, I don't think is going to be...
Enough.
I know, it's going to shake any spark. Namibian dollars. You know, it's Namibian dollars. Look. No, just know. You are in an international.
I thought you were going to say US dollar. You said Namibian dollar. I'm like,
no,
man.
No, you are in. We did not. Was it? Is it 700,000?
US.
I don't know the one that was. No, it's Namibian. No, it will not even refract.
No.
Huh.
No.
No, that's why I'm saying
that will be absorbed by the bank costs.
Yeah.
So it won't even make anything.
No. Yeah, that's why I say no. Cuba must really be respected. Let's
if we can send actual resources, you know, like a physical resource, you send it there, and you, let's say it's oil or something, then you hand over.
But what did the Russia send? Russia sent gas, ne?
Yeah, they sent gas and oil and crude oil. Because Cuba used to get the crude oil under Maduro, they used to get it for free. But now, obviously, since Maduro is no longer there, but that also means that we are done with our discussion this side here on this lovely Monday. Dear listeners, wherever you found yourself,
see you around.
Enjoy the rest of your Monday in our company after this break. Stay tuned for the Ondangwa Squad. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.